That's the sport with Simply Suits.
Staying with the match, right? I see Joe O'Shea in the Mirror saying that it was one of the greatest games of hurling that anyone can remember played out in a fabulous stadium on a glorious early summer night. Everything coming down to the extra time drama and 2 points in the end. And that's brilliant if you were there, right? Magnificent.
Yep.
But what if you weren't? It would cost you €12 to watch it.
€12 to watch it on GAA Go for a once-off match. Even if you want to watch the replay today, it'll cost you €12. There's no, like...
Why aren't people freaking out more about this? Because this is a deal between the GAA and RTE, both of whom make money out of this.
It's massively affected Cork as well, because their three games so far against Waterford, against Clare and against Limerick have all been on GAA Go. They have 38 games in GAA Go. 9 of those are Liam McCarthy Cup hurling games.
And Cork have
been
in,
Cork have been on 3 of them. The game against the British being screened this week, but massively unfair on Cork people. Now, you can buy a season pass for GAA Go, which is €80, which is all 38 games. That works out just over £2 a game. But who wants to watch all those football games?
I'm asking the question as to why people have to pay the national broadcaster when they're already paying a licence fee and they're already funding the GAA.
And why... Like, instead of them being on GAA Go, why wasn't this package sold to TG Cahir? Why wasn't this package sold to Virgin Media? Why aren't they on terrestrial TV? It's
why aren't people kicking up more about it, Rory?
It's very frustrating. I think people are very, very annoyed about it. The GAA's attitude is, and it's a little bit kind of arrogant and condescending, it's like, well, if they're not on GAA Go, they won't be streamed at all. But like
they're big games.
They're huge games.
They should be on television.
Cork against Limerick in a sold-out...
They have three channels. 1, 2 and TG Cahir.
Yeah, or you can even put them on RT News Now. There's 4 channels.
4, or give it to... They are being filmed.
Yeah, but like, it's
give it to Virgin. Do something.
Exactly. Instead of that package being on GAA Go, the 38 games, sell that package.
So where do you watch it? Like, if you're somebody that's not tech-savvy and doesn't have a laptop and can't Chromecast, you're snookered. You can't even pay.
The elderly people, like, imagine if my grandfather were here, God rest his soul, he wouldn't have been able to watch the game.
Oh, man,
you know, because he has no laptop. He wouldn't be able to watch it on TV. It's just, it's very, very frustrating.
I don't get it. Let's get people's thoughts on it. Thank you for that, Roar. Text 0868 104 106.
Cork, here we go again. It's time to talk.
I thought it was April Fool's Day when I heard that one.
Give me off the air before I have a heart attack.
We will have nothing to see for it. There's been many false dawns.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
The kindness of Cork people will never let you down.
Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation yourself. Pick up the phone, 0818 104 106. Text 0868 104 106. Weather-related stories that make the papers today. The Mirror calls it hot and heavy. Thunderstorms hit hard, but the warm weather they're suggesting will return again next weekend. The public shouldn't put away the sunblock just yet. There's a prediction that more sunshine could be on the way by the weekend. We'd take that, and we'd be grateful for it. But Eurovision dominates many of the front pages today. Never more so than here on Leaside, particularly in the town of Macroom, and there's some great aerial high-up shots of the square of Macroom on Saturday night, making this morning's echo with a big, massive screen and many people turning out in lovely weather to cheer on Bambi Thug in the Eurovision. We're said to be still riding the wave of Eurovision euphoria, emphatic that while Bambi Thug missed out on the trophy, they did Ireland, Cork and Macroom proud. Papers this morning say Bambi turns the air blue. Her F-word blast after complaints about the Israeli broadcaster. We'll talk about all of those issues in a few minutes' time. That's the front of the Mirror today. While the Star today talks of the Eurovision star Bambi Thug admitting the song contest had been an eye-opening experience. Her interviews afterwards were quite emotional, quite an amount of expletives, but at the same time saying, I love you beyond and my life is forever changed and it's because of your love and support, and yeah, slay, lots of love, the queers are coming. So it's interesting because there's many, many, many photographs, and when you look at the colour photographs and the stills from Eurovision, particularly of Bambi Thug, you see the amount of effort that went into the stage performance, the amount of effort that went into costuming, makeup, hair arrangements, crowns, whatever the case may be. They told journalists, so now that I'm free, I can talk about everything, right? And she did then. They did, I should say, go on then to talk about the Israeli broadcaster and what was said about the song and about the comments with regards to Ireland saying unkind things about Israel. And of course, that then led to Bambi Thug feeling as if, and perhaps rightly so, that it was now an unsafe environment. So slamming the Eurovision Song Contest organisers for their reaction to their complaint, claiming that they didn't support them after Israel TV branded their semi-final performance as satanic. Graham Norton actually did give a warning on the BBC to people with children that just be aware that the children might find it a little bit scary. But the papers then break. We came sixth. In fact, some of the papers are going to town on the fact that Israel came in ahead of us, which is quite interesting because there seemed to have been quite a lot of cross-voting. Sorry, I should say a lot of cumulative voting for Israel, counter to what may have been thought, you know, last week as we headed into Eurovision. But Switzerland won. Interestingly, they break down in the Independent Day. I may come back to it. It might be a little bit too much detail, but it talks about those that voted for Ireland and those that Ireland voted for, who gave us big points and who gave us small points. And also, you might have seen at the weekend the dreadful performance of the United Kingdom entry and the serious lack of votes for that entry and for that song. So more on that. Your thoughts are welcome on all things Eurovision. Text 0868 104 106. More death, unfortunately. Front of the Mirror this morning, and double plate spread on the inside talks about a father of two brutally stabbed to death in County Kildare, named locally as Ian Daggy. Originally from Moldova, says this morning's Star, stabbed in the chest in a house in County Kildare yesterday morning. They've now launched a murder investigation into it. Neighbours could hear people rowing. They didn't know what the row was about. It was during a late night party at the house, apparently. They didn't know what the rowing was about because they couldn't understand the language being spoken. But a 23-year-old man known to the victim has been arrested. We live in very, very, very dangerous and unsettling times. Papers also then talk about the vast amounts of people who are coming here and the different reasons that they choose to come here, and where, oh, where are they all going to live? Of course, more on that later on, because it was a topic we had on the air on Friday morning. One of the interesting questions that I'm not sure I can completely and utterly answer is, where are all the tents coming from? You know, the tents that are, you know, given to asylum seekers or those looking for international protection, that they stay in for a few nights, then the government comes along, takes all the tents away. I don't think they recycle them. Well, they probably do recycle them, but they'll never be tents again because they get wrecked when they move them away, like 100, 150 or 200 of them. And then within a matter of days, another couple of hundred brand new tents come along. I'm being suggested to me that they're provided by charities that are funded by the Irish government, which means that the taxpayer is constantly paying to have tents delivered, destroyed, tents delivered, destroyed, and on it goes. So they're talking now this morning in the Mail that the vast car parks at RTE, the campus at RTE, is now being looked at as a site for asylum seekers. Now, what you'd put on them, I don't know. What kind of temporary buildings? Would you put modular housing on them? Would you put tents in the car park of RTE? Or would you put, some kind of structures that you can buy that could be adapted for housing, like mobile homes, or, I mean, a step up from mobile homes, I know, but they're certainly looking at the RTE campus as a possible site to house homeless asylum seekers. And you get an awful lot onto the car parks of RTE, like hundreds and hundreds. So that's a story making this morning's Mirror today. And then here on Lee's side, saw another video posted at the weekend, this time from the Scahard Road, Mahon area, where you had three young fellas up in a sulky, and the sulky was being pulled by one of these little mini Shetland ponies, the tiniest little Shetland pony, and they were using the whip from time to time, and I'm told the passing motorists were shouting at them to cop on. So the height of cruelty, the three people would be in a sulky being pulled by a tiny little Shetland pony. But there you have it nonetheless. My lovely horse is saying in the front of this morning's Echo that, what was the figure again for 2023? 58 horses seized across Cork City and County, and it cost us 177,000 to do it. That's the amount that were seized. 15 of them were rehomed, one reclaimed by the owner. Not quite sure what happened to the rest of the poor old animals, but front page making the Echo today. 177 grand for horses seized, and there is an ever increasing rise in welfare issues for horses and ponies. Thankfully, no horses were euthanized in 2023. So I imagine that my lovely horse Rescue manages the great work that they do to find rehousing, if that's the right term for horses, rather than having any allowed to be put down. The ever-changing face of Ireland can be very much reflected in a survey that makes this morning Star. It talks about the Irish pub. Also, less people are drinking. There's an article also saying that one in five pub workers are teetotal. Two in five Generation Zers are teetotal, turning away from drink, looking at other ways of living and enjoying their life. And nearly 40% of publicans are considering retirement in the next 2 years. And most alarmingly, 84% of publicans, which is pretty much nearly all of them, have reported that no family member wants to inherit or take over the pub when the father or the mother or whomever retires. They just don't want to go into the pub business. So that ultimately will lead to it being sold, possibly. Sold maybe for housing, maybe continued as a pub. But you see often that, you know, pubs close and they don't reopen as pubs. They open as homes or apartment blocks. Or indeed just close totally because the vast majority of sons and daughters don't want to go into the business. And then if things weren't bad enough, we see in the front of the Mail this morning the primary school funding at a time when there's more need than ever now with an ever-increasing population and a shortage of primary school places. You would think that they'd be putting more funding into it. They put funding into all sorts of other things, but not primary schools, cutting it by 7 million euro a year. That works out at about 16 euro per pupil nationally. But when you cum it up, no wonder the teachers and the parents are freaking out. There's a cut from 96 million a year to 80 million a year at a time when they tell us that there's loads and loads of money. Oh, the things that involve numbers now is this law will pass. It will be the legal age for buying cigarettes or tobacco. It's going to go from 18 to 21. It's being pushed by Stephen Donnelly. This week, he will ask for the cabinet approval, and it will increase, in the not-too-distant future, the legal age by 3 years to which people can buy or smoke cigarettes. Now, they may not be able to buy them, but one wonders whether it will cut down on the smoke. It's bound to have some positive impact, but somebody can always get a cigarette or a packet of cigarettes like they can get a drink. If they can't buy it, they can get others to buy it for us. And then, when you look at the things that we eat or drink, there's a story making English Times today and another one making the Irish papers. One of the Irish papers is saying that there's an ever-increasing link now between obesity and cancer. And this morning, the English Times is saying there is a lot of talk in the UK at the moment about the sick note culture. We don't talk about it here so much. It's just a story that really hasn't caught on of late. But it's big news in the UK, the amount of people that are out on sick notes. And they're saying that the genuine ones, an awful lot of the sick note culture has to do and is fueled by the obesity crisis, what people are eating. Bruce Springsteen has no worries in that regard because his onstage production means he burns a lot of calories and he stays very fit for a man who's getting on, but he still puts on incredible gigs and will play Cork on Thursday evening. And since 1985, Ralph Regal tells us that Springsteen has never omitted playing Ireland from his European tour schedule. And that's worth remembering. But one of the things that he loves to do, and I'd love to know what Springsteen loves to do on Leaside. You know, where does he like to go? I mean, maybe he doesn't get a whole lot of time. Maybe he's in and out and gone. But certainly, anytime he's in Dublin, he loves to go visiting the Chipper. And his own favourite is Leo Burdock's fish and chip shop down Christchurch Way, which is a cracking chipper, give it its due. But I'm wondering, is there any equivalent? Might ask Ralph Regal that. What does Springsteen like to do on the QT when he's on Leaside? Would it be a pint in the High B? Would it be a super Sambo inside in the Long Valley? What would it be? Ringing the Shandon bells? What would you recommend, guys? If Springsteen has a few hours on his hands on Thursday or Friday morning even. Text 0868 104 106.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868
104 106. The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
And so to Eurovision, and of course when it was all over and all of the votes were in, Bambi Thug, as they say in the front of the Mirror this morning, turned the air blue. Now there's a lot of beeping in what I'm going to play for you, but Bambi spoke about the actual event itself, the amount of hard work and the effort, the carry on with regards to the Israeli broadcaster, stuff to do with the Dutch entry and things like that. Now, this is the audio. If you haven't heard it before, obviously, we had to do quite an amount of beeping on it, but Bambi didn't hold back.
Queer power, baby. Go, Switzerland!
Speaking of that, Nemo wearing your crown then. Oh, how did that happen?
Listen, I brought a crown We had to crown a witch. All non-binaries are witches. I'm beyond ecstatic that they've won for us. And I, yeah.
When you won Eurosong, you sang a gorgeous Irish song, Tordum, Tor Shanstone. Have you any more Irish to sing for us tonight?
I can sing that one again for you if you want.
Can you sing it for us again?
Tordum, Tordum, Tor Shanstone. Conair Samahir, Magrogiel. And you did, you let me sing for you. I'm so proud. I'm free, I can talk about everything, right?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, so Can, the broadcaster, incited violence against me twice, three times. And we brought it up to the EBU. They said they'd follow up. They waited till the last minute. We still haven't got a statement back for us. Allowed us to be scapegoats, allowed us to be the spokesperson for standing up for ourselves. And the broadcaster has disobeyed the rules, and I hope next year they won't be allowed to compete because of that. And behind the scenes, you don't know the amount of pressure and the amount of work that we have been doing to change things. And I am so proud of Nemo for winning. I am so proud that all of us are in the top 10 that have been fighting for this shit behind the scenes, because it has been so hard and it has been so horrible for us. And I'm so proud of us. And I just want to say, we are what the Eurovision is. The EBU is not what the Eurovision is. The EBU, I don't even care anymore. Them. The thing that makes this is the contestants, the community behind it, the love and the power and the support of all of us is what is making change. And the world has spoken. The queers are coming. Non-binaries for the win. And I am so proud. I'm so proud.
So probably it's been quite a stressful time.
Yeah, it's been stressful.
So hard, so horrible, but yet they say so proud. A man that we've been chatting with all week long last week, Seamus O'Neill. He's part of the Eurovision podcast called I'm Sorry, 0 Points. Just back from Malmo, joins me by phone. Morning, Seamus. Morning, how are you?
Good morning, Neil. How am I? Tired, broke, I can barely speak.
All of the above. So really, yes. This turned out to be a lot more, an awful lot more than just a song contest, right?
Well, it certainly did this year. Very unusual year, I must say. Not something I've experienced previously, and this is my 8th time going to the contest. But yeah, I suppose what you can hear there in Bambi's interview is the tension that's been there all week, the past 2 weeks, really, because they've been there for a long time doing rehearsals, and the tension that's been there, and I suppose the treatment that they have received, because there has been harassment from the Israeli delegation towards Bambi and towards other acts. And I suppose that's the build-up of that tension there. And I suppose after the final, you know, Bambi was able to speak a bit more about it, and that's the emotion that came out there.
Okay. They said Israeli state broadcasters violence against me 2 to 3 times. What does that mean?
Yeah, so I think Bambi's referring there to when Bambi performed in their semi-final on the Tuesday night, she did raise an issue about the commentary that the Israeli broadcasters made before Bambi performed. Bambi wasn't happy with the commentary that they said about them, and basically the Israeli commentator said, you know, lock up your children now because we're going to see something very strange from Ireland, and just some other things to that effect. So Bambi did raise that issue. Also then on Saturday afternoon, there is a rehearsal before the final on Saturday night. And at that rehearsal, someone from the Israeli delegation was videoing Bambi without her consent. They were also videoing the Greek artist and the Swiss artist without their consent. And this was just before the rehearsal, before they were about to go on. So Bambi actually missed their dress rehearsal Saturday afternoon because of that, because, again, Bambi brought it to the attention of the EBU that they were being harassed by the Israeli delegation. But again, not much was done by the EBU about that. So there were a few incidences, and I suppose the fans saw it as well. In the Euro Club in the evening time, after Bambi qualified Tuesday night, Bambi was at the Euro Club, And we could see some of the Israeli fans and delegation kind of harassing Bambi in the Euroclub and kind of following them around. I didn't, but friends of mine saw it, and also the president of the Irish fan club, Frank, saw it. And he actually has wrote an official complaint about it and about how Bambi was being kind of goaded almost by the Israeli fans and delegation to try and get a reaction out of them. So there was intense kind of situations happening. So, you know, I do feel sorry for Bambi. You know, they were just standing up for what they believed and speaking their voice. But there was definitely intimidation happening behind the scenes.
Yeah, they warned, the state broadcaster in Israel warned viewers that Bambi's performance would be the most scary of the night, involving a lot of spells and black magic and dark clothing, satanic symbols and voodoo dolls. That's supposedly, we must take that as a criticism or unkind thing to say, is it?
Well, yeah, they weren't saying it in a positive light anyway.
Or is it the other part where... He then went on television and said Bambi liked to speak negatively about Israel.
Exactly, yeah, there was that too. And there was something about kind of lock up your children now and, yeah, just, you know, painting Bambi in a negative
light. Oh, yeah, and then he went on to say, more, we can talk about that later, but prepare your curses.
Yeah, so it's been a tough time for Bambi, I think, so... The emotion came out then after the final, and she kind of spoke. I suppose she was able to.
Yeah. What happened with the Dutch?
So the Dutch, yeah. So that was another incident, as if it wasn't an incident packed Eurovision. So the Dutch artists qualified on Thursday night out of their semi-final, and after that, there was some incident with a female camera person. The Dutch artist, I think, was running off stage and had very little time to run to the green room. And I believe there was a female camera person who was filming him, even though at the time it was agreed there would be no filming because he needed to get to the green room quickly. And I think he must have made some kind of verbal threat or some kind of a threat. There was no physical altercation from what we understand, but there was just some kind of a maybe threat towards the camera person. And obviously the camera person reported that. And then there's an investigation which is still ongoing, but obviously, the EBU thought it was serious enough that they disqualified Joost Klein, the Dutch artist, from the final.
How did the Dutch supporters react to that?
Oh, shit, they were up in arms over it, as was all the Eurovision fans, really, because we were just reading between the lines and the bits of information we were getting, and the Dutch fans and broadcaster felt it was disproportionate to what actually happened. Yeah. They didn't think a disqualification was valid. And then on the night of the final, then obviously the Dutch artist didn't perform, and the Dutch broadcaster then said that they would not present their votes. So what happened then is the EBU's spokesperson, Martin Osterdal, gave the Dutch votes, and you could clearly hear a huge amount of booing towards Martin and towards the EBU because the Dutch artist wasn't there and wasn't allowed to perform. So there was very much a lot of booing and a lot of dissection with the EBU this year over how the whole thing has been managed, to be honest. And they do need to go away and reflect on this year's contest.
I'd say they're quite relieved it's all over, because it potentially could have been a heck of a lot worse.
Oh, it could have been. It could have been a disaster. And and I suppose as fans, we were a bit fearful that it could turn into a real mess if Israel won. That would have been a very tense situation in the arena and afterwards. So in one way, I suppose the fans were kind of relieved that Israel didn't win, but the EBU certainly had to go away and look at things and change how they manage things, because it was not a typical Eurovision year. That's not what Eurovision is about. It's normally a very happy, positive place, but it was so strange this year.
But in spite of, you know, much of the criticism of Israel, and it's not something that I want to kind of dissect in a huge amount of detail, but they did very well in Eurovision. They finished top five.
They came fifth. They came 12th with the juries, and then they got the second highest public vote. And now I know, again, you're going to have people questioning that public vote and how valid that is, and was it, you know, an orchestrated campaign to get a high public vote? But either way, yes, they did got a very big public vote, and they ended up fifth. So
maybe maybe people weren't interested in all of the politics, and it was just a good song.
Absolutely, there's that as well, and that's a fair point as well. But I suppose we just don't really know the truth behind the public votes. But yeah, they ended up fifth, so just ahead of Ireland. But yeah, I suppose as fans, we're just kind of happy that we're not going to Israel next year.
Yeah, well, you were right on the money, though. I give you that, Seamus. You did call Ireland in and around top five or six. So, you know, fair play in that regard. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking if we come top 10, that would be amazing. So, obviously, as fans, we're delighted to come sixth. We were sixth with the jury, sixth with the public. So, that was an excellent result. Our best result since 2000 when we came sixth as well. And yeah, and then we have a very worthy winner in the Swiss artist Nemo as well.
So, okay.
I think as fans, we're happy.
Okay. I think we've a newfound love, not that we ever fell out of love, but we've a newfound extra love now for the Australians, don't we?
We do, yeah. They were the only ones to give us 12 points, so absolutely delighted with the Australian people. Thanks for that.
Yeah. Six juries gave us 10, and it goes all the way down through the list of votes or whatever. It's not really all that important now. We came sixth, full stop. But what happened to the UK?
Oh my God, yeah, poor Ali Alexander. You know, he got points from the juries, but then when it came to the public, he got zero from the public, which was a shame because that wasn't deserved. He did put in a good performance, but I don't know, maybe people just didn't like the song. I'm not sure, or is there an anti-UK sentiment out there? I just don't know.
They just can't get it right these days, can they?
No, not really. Not since Sam Ryder. He came second there 3 years ago. But yeah, they're not having a good streak, the UK. So again, they need to go back to the drawing board, I suppose, and see what they need to do for next year.
Okay. Bambi Thug did Ireland proud, did Cork proud, and certainly did Macroom proud. There was a great turnout on Saturday night. Would you say that was your most memorable Eurovision so far?
Memorable, but maybe not for the right reasons. Yeah, like I definitely won't forget it, for sure. I definitely won't forget the feeling of being in the arena and all the booing and cheering and that. But I've been to nicer, warmer, positive Eurovisions, let's say.
Yeah, I know. We live in very, very interesting times. I just want to thank you for all your contributions over the past week. Perhaps we'll have opportunity, touch wood, to do it all again next year. But good luck with the podcast. I'm sorry, 0 points. Drive on with that one. And regards to Adrian as well. Thanks so much, Seamus.
Thanks, Neil. Thanks a million.
Appreciate it, my man. Another person who got an awful lot of attention over the recent week or so was Angela, who was off on a Eurovision hen with all of her pals. In fairness to her, she sent me a lovely little video message on my Instagram page over the weekend with the rest of the girls, and they were all suited and booted and all done up to the nines. Imagine she possibly is back on Lee's side now, but with Angela, you just wouldn't know. Angela, good morning.
Hi, Neil. Good morning.
Ah, you don't even sound hoarse. Did you get back last night?
We got back I got back to Cork for 5:30. Our flight actually was the only one not diverted. Everything after us was diverted.
Wow.
To Shannon.
Why? Weather?
Yeah. There was stormy weather in Dublin.
Okay. Anyway, that didn't inhibit your fabulous, fabulous trip. How did it go for you guys? You seem to have been having a lot of fun.
We had a lot of fun. We had. It was different to last year. The vibe around the place was different. We made the most of it, and we had a good time.
What performance did you get into? Was it one of the previews?
We got into the preview, yeah. And then we were doing a bit of filming for a pre-recording party in the Eurovision Village, so we stayed there for the final. So we watched the preview that day.
Okay, so watching the final then in a Eurovision Village, what was the atmosphere there? Was it happy? Was it tense? What?
It was quite happy, yeah. The Irish and the Spanish had a lot of support come over, so we were kind of definitely the two biggest countries I saw with support. It was a sigh of relief, when Bambi came out with the flag, because they didn't come out for the preview show for us. It was the only performance that wasn't played.
Yeah, that's because there was some incident, something happened they made a complaint
about. So there was a big sigh of relief. Even though we heard they were going to be on the final, until we saw Bambi, we weren't taking anything for granted.
I was reading online on Saturday that there was a worry that there wouldn't be any Irish performance in the final.
Yeah, so, and it was like, you'd get all these updates from all our Eurovision chats and groups and stuff that there's these emergency meetings, but it was all very cryptic. No one knew what was really happening. It was strange, yeah.
But the performance, you were absolutely over the moon about. You say that the Irish performance was the strongest of them all on the night.
Yes, I think it had the most impact. I think Bambi was amazing. I felt, I loved the theatrics of it all. I thought we would have got higher. There's a few countries above us, including France, that I thought didn't deserve to be up there. It's awful. I'm sorry to the French.
The French entry was a ballad. It was a damn good song, though.
It was. We heard it, as I said in the preview, he stopped the song halfway through. We didn't kind of get to the encore, so we didn't get the full impact. He made a bit of a statement instead. So
I suppose you can do anything in a preview, I suppose, can't you?
Yeah, but then the fear was, I think, that they might all go rogue on the final. I think the final, they had a 5-minute difference in case something happened. That's what I heard from the live broadcast.
Oh, okay, 5-minute delay. Yeah. Okay, so there was a lot of tension as to how the whole evening would play out then.
It was very unsure, yeah. And when Israel was coming so high, as we spoke amongst ourselves, we were quite happy not to be in the arena for the final, for the fear that Israel would win. And you just don't know what would happen there. Like, the standing area was very packed. If there was any sort of rioting at all, it would be very dangerous. And just, I don't think I would have enjoyed the atmosphere in there for the final.
Okay.
At least when you're out and about and you're chatting to people and you can walk around, the tension is kind of dispersed a bit. And you kind of chat to different people and it wasn't as intense.
Okay. But you don't regret the trip, no?
Not at all. Sure, we were singing karaoke with Leo Varadkar on the Friday. We were in a karaoke bar.
I saw a little clip of that. What were they doing? My Heart Will Go On. Is it Celine Dion or something like that?
No, Leo and Matthew did Hold Me Now, Johnny Logan.
Hold Me Now.
They did.
Did you hear them singing? Were you there for that?
Yeah, we were sitting next to them for the night. So we were singing. That was quite fun.
Did you guys do a karaoke number?
Oh, we did. They couldn't get us off the stage, Neil. We done plenty of them.
Like what you do? Were they all Euro songs?
I did Puppet on a String because it's one of my favourites. I love Puppet on a String by Sandy Shaw. We did Zombie to represent the Irish. What else did we do? We did Lady Marmalade because there was four of us.
Oh my God.
They couldn't get us. Yeah, that was very good.
Is there any video of that knocking around? I've seen the Leo and Matt video, but I haven't seen any of you yet.
I don't know. Do you want to see our videos?
Did you find it very expensive?
No. We were speaking to a lot of people from Malmo in Sweden. I didn't find it overly expensive. The points were maybe 6-7 euros.
That's the same as all.
Yeah, and they told us prices have actually been hiked up for this weekend. So they said it's normally not this expensive. I'm a Prosecco drinker myself.
Oh, sorry.
On my cava. Yeah, far from it. I was rare to nail, but I do have the lip for it now. But in the Euro Village, I think I was getting a full bottle of cava. It was really, really nice for 45 euro. Because it was my hen, I said, sure, why not? So I didn't think that was overly expensive for cava, to be honest.
How many bottles, though? That's the problem.
We had 3 bottles.
Not all for you, though, surely.
between two.
What was the head like Sunday morning?
Oh, it was worth it. That's all I did. It was worth it, yeah. We did good.
Okay, thing. So now on to the next stage of your life, getting married.
I'm forgetting about that. We're still in Eurovision mode, but we're down now to under 3 weeks. So we were doing the seating plan now last night, which is a little part of a wedding, more so than the Eurovision.
Yeah. Just remind us again, where is the wedding?
It's on in Killarney.
That's right,
the
you heights, said that. Yeah. How many?
The Heights of Ten. We have 180.
Oh, crikey, that's a big wedding.
There was 250 invited, so...
70 turned down the invitation, is it?
Yes, you know, so we'll go with 180.
70 you thought were friends turned out not to be friends at all.
I know, I think we're having it on an awkward weekend. I wouldn't put anything...
Oh, yeah, right, okay, I'll accept that. I'll accept. And is there a theme for the wedding? Like, is there a Euro theme running through it?
We have Eurovision bits and pieces, but the theme of the wedding is quite Irish. So our seating plans will be old Irish movies and things like that. Oh, and we have a lot of vintage looking. My dress is quite vintage. The suits are quite of the times. We're kind of going 1920s era. Yeah.
I admire your creativity. I really do. In everything you do, you know, and I admire the fact that you get out there and you have a good laugh and you go for it, and that's what you do.
Why not?
Weekend. Absolutely,
you
why not?
You have to go with the full hog, or else is it worth it at all? I don't think so.
I agree. Well, anyway, listen. Best of luck in the next chapter of your life, getting
Thank
married
very
much. Soon down in Killarney. And it's been lovely chatting with you over the last few days. You never know; we might do it all again. Where will it be next year? Where in Switzerland will it be? Do you know?
Well, we've Zurich and Bern booked
already.
Yeah, we have. But sure, when Croatia were favoured to win, we looked up for 3 nights and they'd block booked all the hotels. It was €20,000 before they even won. And Neil, I'd just like to remind you, last week I told you Switzerland were going to win it.
You did.
Don't know if you remember that.
I do.
I'm right.
And you're already booked in and everything for Eurovision 2025.
In, yeah.
My God, you're a glutton for it.
I think it's Bern. I think Bern is the whispering I'm hearing. I don't know if they have one of the biggest arenas.
So what do you have to do then? Do you have to, like, it's not, you get the one flight into Switzerland. You don't have to book hotels in all of the major cities or anything just in case.
No, I think it's going to be Basel, Bern, Geneva or Zurich. And I think we're going to take our chances with Zurich or Bern. And then I think there's a direct flight from Cork. Because I don't know if I'd ever fly from Dublin again.
It's a dose.
It
really is. Particularly if you're coming in at night and you're exhausted and then you're only in Dublin and you got to make it all the way back to Cork. So hopefully it'll be a direct flight. Whatever. You've a few nice things to look forward to. A wedding and Eurovision 2025. Regards to all of the girls. Great to catch up, Angela. Thanks for all your contributions over the last week. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Bye, Neil.
Bye. Take care. Text 0868104106. Reactions and more calls after the break.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Same with Eurovision, of course. We have the homecoming, obviously, to the town of Macroom, and the streets of Macroom were absolutely jointed with people. Big, massive screen in the big area in the middle of town on Saturday. Cillian Lynch is the chairman of the Macroom Music Festival, which happens next month. Joins me by phone. Cillian, good morning.
Good morning, how are things?
I'm good. How'd it go for you guys? Looked like big numbers and a beautiful evening for it.
Absolutely fantastic evening. The square was full from 7 o'clock on until beyond midnight until the Eurovision was over. Absolutely outstanding.
And you want to have a big homecoming now, is that right?
That's the plan. Everyone, look, Bambi deserves it. She did us, we were done proud.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, God almighty, it was years since we were ever in the Eurovision final.
Oh, exactly. Like, to come sixth, that's an outstanding result. Our plan here is, like, we'll have the music festival here in the 22nd of June, where we'll have the stunning, the Hermitage Green and the White Horse Guitar Club, and we'd be hoping to have Bambi, as I say, we'll have homecoming as well.
Do you think that Bambi might perform?
You never know. I suppose the call is out. As a result of it, like, we have seen even tickets there. I can see it there yesterday. The amount of tickets that were bought for the music festival yesterday was absolutely crazy. And in anticipation that Bambi may be at the concert.
So when you think of it, like, the performance, the Eurovision, it's done wonders for Macroom, hasn't it?
Absolutely. Like, I suppose Macroom has a we go back a long way to the Mountain Dew. We had the Wild West Weekend music as well. We had, again, Macroom Music Festival, which started last year, and there were thousands at it, again, live in the square. So okay. Fantastic. We have a history of music in Macroom.
Okay, watch this space for details. Of course, back in the day, the Mountain Dew was in the grounds of the castle. Are those days long gone now?
Well, those days, you'd never know the way the music festival is going this time. Those days might have to come back around.
They were fabulous days, man. I can go way back to Van Morrison, Rory Gallagher. I saw some great gigs there down in the air. And it always seemed, the sun always seemed to shine and Macroom would be jammed with people down for the festival weekend. They were terrific days, weren't they?
Oh, fantastic. Like, well, it's lovely. Look, McCroom was bypassed last year and has given us all the opportunity now to do what we want here in the local community, the businesses, Cork County Council. All the everyone is on board, and it has really brought about this community spirit within Macroom. And look, we're showcasing it now to its best ability, really.
Okay, just off topic for one second. That bypass you're saying has benefited the town of Macroom, has it?
Macroom town has, before bypass, you found it hard to get parking spaces, because you couldn't get into the town, but those people, an awful lot of people, were just coming through the town.
True enough, now, yeah.
Yeah, now the amount of cars in town, the amount of people just walking up and down the street. Before, you just was full of cars, now it's full of people. Talking to all of the businesses, they're all up in revenue, there's more people. Like, as I met a person there last week, and he said, Killian, I'd always go to another town. I won't mention the town, but he said, no, he's about 12, 13 miles from outside the town. He said, I'd never come into Macroom. No, always. I come into Macroom twice a week, and he said, I go to the pool or I go to the summer to eat.
Yeah.
He said, it's fantastic.
So it really was a thoroughfare for many years. Now it's become a town again with
a hub.
With a sense of community and retail and social aspects to it.
Yeah, and it has a nice centre. Like, I suppose it has all of the services and amenities. I've often said there, it's not just one of these places that it's a concrete jungle in the sense that it's full of houses. Like, we have, like, how many towns in the country, as I've said before, have an 18-hole golf course smack in the centre? We have the Castle Domain, we've all the walks, we've all made all the, we've done Lidl, Aldi, and all our local
Super Value here
in the centre of the town as well. All of this, it's fantastic.
Just goes to show, don't be afraid of a bypass. It will actually be a boon for your community. So the homecoming from Bambi for Bambi Thug would be waiting till next month, because I'm quite sure that Bambi will be back in Macroom soil fairly soon.
I would be hoping to, but look, we're in discussions at the moment, and it remains to be seen. Look, as I say, watch the space.
I think it would be, if Bambi were to make a performance, or part of a performance of the lineup for the music festival, it would be a wonderful, wonderful thing if it could be made happen. Good luck in the negotiations with that, my friend.
I know, don't talk to me.
Good luck.
Yeah.
You're wearing a different hat than that one to your auctioneering hat, that's for sure.
I don't know which one is easier.
Good luck. Thanks, Killian. Take care.
Thanks, Neil.
Killian
Thanks.
Lynch,
Thanks.
Auctioneer and chair of the Macroom Music Festival. I nearly said the Macroom Mountain Dew Festival, but I have happy memories of that from way back in the day. Text 0868 104 106. Laureen says, I didn't watch Eurovision for the first time in years. The whole thing was just too messed up. Finbar said it was like something out of a circus. Eurovision 2024. Alan says, well done, Israel, finishing fifth place. A place above your biggest critic. That's an interesting text. William says, Nemo from Switzerland deserved to win. Bambi Thug was a huge success. Todd says, I would have more respect if they boycotted the competition, but her selfish urge to be on stage overlooked her political beliefs. I'm happy to read the text out. I don't necessarily agree with all of them. I think, you know, to some extent, you know, you want to get on stage, don't you? It's an opportunity in your career to, you know, show yourself and your talents to a worldwide audience. It's hard to walk away from an opportunity like that, isn't it? Terry says, I'm lost for words. What's the world coming to? Thank God my grandchildren were watching, as they would have been really scared with some of the performances. Thomas says, Nemo is from the same country as me, so we are so proud of him. Obviously, we have people listening who are either Swiss or perhaps even in Switzerland. I didn't realize that they were a band. I thought it was just one person on her own. David, well impressed with the scale of the performance. Greta says, sixth place. Well done, Bambi. Congratulations. Ireland has not done so well for many years. Up Cork. We need to remember that. Another one here. Everyone going wild and congratulating them for getting to the finals. And now this. Awful that some of the comments are calling them a freak show because they dress a bit different. Wouldn't the world be so boring if we all acted the very same? I loved the act and my own thoughts on the Israeli delegation and how they themselves acted over the past week. You should be ashamed of all of the comments you are passing, people. Bambi brought a Eurovision song to the contest, and it showed. It's the best we've done in years. Kate says, absolutely outstanding performance from Bambi Thug on Eurovision. Jim wants to know, since when is Australia in Europe? Well, I think we're probably half glad that they were in Europe on Saturday night with 12 points. Absolutely demonic and an insult to our cultural values. Joseph, I imagine, is referencing the Irish entry. Ronan says she won't be on the open top bus. Thanks be to God. Never heard of anything in the dark recesses of the dark world that she so admires. Each to their own, I suppose. We need to make room for everybody, don't we? And a final one or two. If you want an honest reply to the question, what did you think of Eurovision? I thought it was the worst one ever. It no longer is a singing competition. It's all about special effects and who can shout the loudest. And final one for now, Lucas says, I much preferred Justin the Turkey. Text 0868104106. We'll pick it up after 10.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
And it's Monday morning, and a wonderful way to brighten up the start of the week is the Monday Munchies, courtesy of ourselves and Luso in Ballincollig, is making beautiful cakes and treats for people who love chocolate and love cake. And you can see all of their delicious creations, should you like to buy for a special event, for an occasion, or just because you love cake and chocolate, lusocork.ie, www.lusocork.ie. Unbelievable creations and delicious to eat. So this week, we want to know who you are and where you're working. Text 0868104106 for your chance to have delivered a Luso extravaganza, the fabulous fudge cake filled with Belgian chocolate, Italian meringue, a beautiful ganache. It's all on a chocolate board with handmade macaroons, and there's a lot of delicious eating in it. So someone in the workplace will win it for their work colleagues. Text who you are and where you are to 0868104106 to win this beautiful treat. It will be delivered at lunchtime by Red Patroller. So let us know who you are and where you are. Text 0868104106 and we'll start those shout-outs in about half an hour's time. Now, a lot of other stuff to do this morning and topics to cover, but just staying with Eurovision for another little while. I got an interesting email in from Martin, who obviously watched the performances on Saturday night and probably also watched some of the conversations by with Bambi Thug afterwards to members of the media. I'm writing to you out of concern. I'm writing to you a bit confused. I watched the Eurovision Song Contest on Saturday night, and I'm wondering if young children or teenagers were watching it, how did it influence them and what parents thought? I'm delighted that the Irish entry did well, but what really influenced the scoring and the results? I need to point out that I'm not a racist nor homophobic, as I have many friends who are of different sexual persuasions. But what concerns me most is the post-interview given by the Irish entry, obviously, Bambi Thug. Bambi Thug said, F-U-C-K, the EBU, the European Broadcasting Union. Bambi Thug said, the world has spoken, the queers are coming, and non-binary will win. Remember, this was to a world audience. Bambi Thug was representing the Irish people and had a responsibility to the Irish people. If an Irish boxer or runner or rugby player or swimmer or soccer player or politician made such statements, how would it be received? So the real questions are for me, is this okay? Should we just accept it? And has the time come to have an age restriction on such events like Saturday night's Eurovision? Irrespective of one's personal challenges or struggles, respect and concern for those on the receiving end of such statements or remarks needs to be taken into consideration. I, for one, don't accept this behaviour, and given the challenges that young people are having trying to fit into this world and the pressures that parents are under trying to cautiously navigate their children in a world that seems to have lost its values, lost its cultural respect, I truly believe that the time has come to address this a la carte type society that has emerged recently. Given that children's brains are developing up to the age of 25, is it any wonder now our children are confused and suffer with various mental health issues? It seems that certain narratives being pushed out there and nature have collided together, creating the perfect emotional storm. He goes on to say, I would hate to see this email being viewed as someone having a rant against individuals, race or communities. I feel it represents the views of many, irrespective of race or sex. I do see a great future for our children, but if we want to address the needs of our children, give proper leadership and guidance, we have to have the courage to confront all the obstacles to avoid the need to hijack world events like happened on Saturday for political, sexual or personal gains. After all, this is a song contest, or at least that's what it's supposed to be, says Martin by email. Very interesting email with lots of, interesting thoughts being made, personal to Martin, although he does believe a lot of people would agree. I fail to see how you could say, Bambi Thug said, FUCK, the European Broadcasting Union, the queers are coming, non-binary will win. Martin says, you know, what would happen if it was a boxer or a runner or a rugby player or a swimmer or a soccer player or a politician representing Ireland saying something like that? Well, I don't think that would ever happen because they would not be in the same situation, say, for instance, that Bambi Thug has found themselves over the years, where it has been tough, the fight and the battle for acceptance, the fight and the battle to be seen as who they are. How could you say that somebody who was playing rugby that was maybe heterosexual or a swimmer, or are you just saying if they were to curse and swear like that, how it would be viewed? I think sometimes maybe it could be said that it was an emotional evening, considering what Bambi Thug went through across the week. And there was a lot going on in Eurovision besides just the song contest. But anyway, given that children's brains develop up to the age of 25, is it any wonder that there are mental health issues? There are many who would suggest that there probably are lots of mental health issues amongst people in society, and unfortunately with young people. I'm not quite sure that you're trying to say that somebody who doesn't present as being heterosexual or straight is suffering from mental health issues. I'm assuming you're not saying that, thankfully. But interesting, I wonder how many people would agree or disagree with that email. Text 0868 104 106. Just one or two other points I want to make on this, because like a lot of what the Israelis were talking about, it being, you know, satanic and being scary and, you know, mind your children and, also issues regarding what the Israelis claimed that Bambi Thug was saying about Israel. That led then to, of course, Bambi Thug feeling rather unsafe at Eurovision. But many people are questioning, I see texts this morning about the satanic aspect to all of that, and I think maybe amongst them, John. John, good morning.
Morning,
Lee. Am I misreading what you're about to say?
I don't think so, because it's not so long ago that you were giving out a warning to people about Ouija boards on the radio show.
Oh, that's some time ago, but I certainly recall that. Yeah, they're dangerous, John, that's why.
Oh, yeah, but all of a sudden then we have somebody that's supposedly representing all of us, and she's thrown herself around in a pentagon, and she's got every symbol that you could possibly think was satanic. No, I don't know whether she's satanic or not, but she's certainly on the fringes of the stuff that she's playing with. She don't represent.
You use the term she as opposed to they, is because I'm constantly being pushed back by people that I should be correcting everybody that doesn't say they.
Yeah, well, hold on a while now.
Well, what are you saying?
When she flew into Israel and she showed her passport, it said that she was a female. It didn't say she was gay.
What do you mean fly into Israel? Nobody flew into Israel.
Into Sweden.
I've no idea, but I don't know. I mean, like, clearly, you can't have a non-binary passport. I know that.
That's right. There you go now. This is an in and out thing. You can use your passport with what it says male or female on it, and it doesn't say anything else on it.
I'm quite sure that where we're at now, when we're going in the future, will probably result in non-binary passports at some stage.
I wouldn't think so.
You don't think so?
I wouldn't think so.
Okay.
No, there'd be no not even our government would be that stupid. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, like, we've come down the road a long ways with what's running the country at the moment, but even they couldn't be that dumb. To go down that road.
Do you know what I heard all week long? And we live in an ever-changing world where we need to try and be kind to everybody and let them live their lives the way they want to live. But what I heard from Bambi Thug all last week was about love, was about peace, about everybody getting along together. I know that some people took a little bit of umbrage of the queers are coming or non-binary will win. But for me, their message has been love, respect and peace. What the hell is wrong with that?
Yeah, but hold on a while now.
Over and over.
When the Israeli girl, Eden Golan, was being harassed, did she stand up and ask the crowd to stop and to behave themselves? Where was her thoughts on that one?
I have no idea, but I think you're kind of you're picking holes, you know. No.
But you just said that it was all about love and understanding and peace and blah blah blah.
Love, peace, understanding, everybody getting along, allowing people to live their own lives. It doesn't really impact. I know that there are some aspects, all right, with regards to, you know, safe spaces and things like that, and, you know, sport aspects. But other than that,
the Greek entry has been frowned on by the Greek people because of her disingenuous attitude to the Israeli girl when she was being interviewed. She's getting it from her own people at home in Greece, people who have been speaking.
That's interesting. I did see something about that this morning, that there was issues also involving the Greek entry. I wasn't aware of that, but apparently there was something.
We've gone down a very dangerous road here, and I think that the Eurovision is actually finished because of the way it's gone. It was supposed to be a song contest that families used to sit down and used to have a bet on sitting in the sitting room watching us. They make up a kitty and the whole lot and everything, and it was fun and games, and we enjoyed the spectacle.
I'm quite sure people still did that, but we can't go back to the days. The music has changed from the days of Puppet on a String or all kinds of everything. It's just
The music is not the problem. It's the attitude. That's gone wrong. When you have a 20-year-old girl who wants to go to a song contest to perform, and she has to have snipers on the roofs of the buildings across the way to protect her, and she has to have an armed guard to bring her to a hotel back and forth, and she can't come out.
You're right there.
Why? What does she do to anybody? She's 20 years old. I know the problem that they're having, because they have a political belief that which is causing confusion to a lot of people, because they don't know the full facts.
I'm spending a lot of time on Eurovision and different aspects of it, but the Eurovision vote for Israel was very healthy.
Yes, it was, because all the people realised the fact is that what we're listening to isn't the facts.
Okay,
they're waking up to the truth.
Jim says Ireland gave Israel 10 points.
That's correct. Which they did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They certainly did. Yeah. So I'm wondering, was there many Irish people that just said, "I'm not interested in all of this political stuff. I'm not interested in whatever is going on." With regard, and I'm not diminishing what's happening in Palestine, but they're saying, "I'm voting for the song because it's a good song."
Well,
otherwise, why would we have given 10 points to Israel?
The song was brilliant, and under the circumstances with what she went through, I mean, her performance was outstanding, as was other performers, because they must have felt the tension as well, not just her. Because anything was liable to happen at any stage, and the police were out in numbers because they were expecting some kind of an incident to happen, which was an ongoing possibility.
Yeah. But the original point you're making is me warning people some time ago when we were doing something on the air with regards to Ouija boards.
That's right. And then we have a whole program showing somebody that Graham Norton told the viewers in Britain that your kids may not want to see this. It wouldn't be too good for them.
I don't think he actually put it like that, though, did he?
That was the guts of it. He said it may not be suitable for young people. They may get scared.
Now,
Graham can say that because he's gay, because he won't be accused of attacking her because of her non-binary status. But if you or me said it, we could be accused of all different types of stuff. So everything has gone sideways.
He did, yeah. Graham Norton did say, you say he had the balls to say it.
Yeah.
In fact, you say
well,
it was correct.
I wouldn't come on to your show and tell you something that wasn't.
No, I know that, but like you're commending him for saying this may not be suitable for children.
Oh, absolutely. And it should have been said on the Irish television as well.
Yeah. Okay. All right. See a lot of other texts coming in on this one. Let me get on the air with them. Thanks for that, as always. Much obliged, John. Text 0868 104 106. Pick it up after the break.
Call Neil now. 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
We'll come back to text throughout the course of the morning, so get involved. Text 0868 104 106. But over the weekend, the very, very sad news of the passing of what they say in the Echo this morning, a man who was a Leaside legend, Frank O'Flaherty, the Pigeon Man of Dawn Square. And he was just the loveliest, loveliest man. I was very saddened to hear that he passed away over the weekend. He'd often be seen there with his birdseed and feeding the pigeons. They'd be up on top of his head. They'd be on his shoulders. He'd be chatting with people as they went by. At one stage, Frank was getting a lot of grief from Cork City Council, who wanted him to stop what he was doing. He refused to do so. And a lot of people power got behind him at that stage to just let him get on with what he was doing, meeting people, chatting with people and feeding the birds in Dawn Square. I did see Paul Byrne share at the weekend also his sadness of the death of Frank O'Flaherty. He said that a statue to Frank should be erected at Dawn Square. And I would agree with that, so that nobody ever forgets the great Frank O'Flaherty. Seamus Whelehan, some time back when Frank was under a bit of pressure from City Council to stop doing what he was doing, Seamus went down. He did a beautiful, beautiful piece with the Birdman down on Dawn Square, and in tribute to him, it's worth playing again. Have a listen.
My name is Frank O'Flaherty, and I'm from Granabrar, school place in Granabrar. And I'm down here every morning just to feed the pigeons. Well, not every morning, some mornings, and I enjoy doing it. And I get my corn from Eddie O'Flaherty's pet shop in the Northman Street, and he's always been very kind about this because you know where it's going to go. But I was here one day, see, and I got an old bread bun, and I just threw it out to him, and I had a couple of crumbs in me, what's the name of it? Oh, yeah. And I had a couple of crumbs in my hand, and up they came, and so I said I'd get a bit of corn the next day. When I got the corn, it started from then. Hello, Kettle.
You listen to the radio all along the week.
Yeah, I was,
yeah. Lord, man. You don't ring in and say, no, it's Frankie with the razor and the vegetable.
So there you are, and so I just enjoy doing it, okay, because I like wildlife in general. I was out in Africa for 14 months, out in Kenya before independence and after independence. And when I was out there, I was in heaven. Wildlife and everything else. I was doing a lot of things in Kenya, but I would, you know, I just need to keep that alone, okay? There's a pile down here now. There's a pile down here now in what's name, in Bishop Lucy Park. And then there's a pile there, but they don't come up. Sometimes they don't come up. They're, most of them don't have to come up in Bishop Lucy Park.
And are they all the same family?
They're all the same. They're all feral. They're known as feral.
And do you know them by name?
I wouldn't. All of them? Jesus, never. Never.
Or would you recognise any of them from
I wouldn't be recognising them because they all look the same. But sometimes there'd be a couple of racing pigeons there, and a few people then from the north side, Granabrar, come down here, and if they saw a good one there, they have a way for catching them. I buy it out to see they go down. Once there's a ring, you know, a ring on the leg. Take them back. One bloke now that comes down here, and he was there. He took two pigeons from here. They both had rings. They're flying to him now. You know, pigeon people. They can tell good pigeons, you know. And this is it, then. Watch this, though.
So how many would you say?
I said there's about 800 pigeons there now at the moment.
And is that a normal flock for you, or
is it small? Most of them don't have to come up from Bishop Lucy Park. You know, and some of them go down to Bishop Lucy Park, because people don't there feed them to, you know. Yeah. The odd person goes in with a loaf of bread or something like that, you know.
I've seen them waiting for you here this morning, as
well,
I said.
Well, that's right. Well, they wait, and they know. They have intelligence too, they know what's coming. And as soon as they come round here with this bag, they're straight on top of me. Hello, my friend. How are you keeping? Hello, Aiden. How are you, boy? And Molly?
You see?
What do you get from it with the birds feeding like this?
I get great satisfaction out of doing it. And I love doing it. Anything to do with wildlife, I love doing it. Even when I would take a walk up now with the dogs, up to the fields, I'd bring up a loaf of bread for the swans. I just love to see it. I just love wildlife.
And what do people make of you?
And then they say, well, just call me the Birdman, and that's it. Sometimes they come up, but just people now come up with their children. And then they get their photograph taken, you know, with feeding the boy, give them a bit of corn and feed it. But you have to be very careful then too, that you don't scratch your child. Because you know yourself, when you know where they're perched at night, You know what I'm talking about.
And you've been into pigeons before, you raised them?
Oh, we had pigeons one time when we were around the brother there, Pat. He had pigeons one time. And they just, when they start building up, we had to get rid of them. We had to get rid of the lobs, you know, because, you know, we held properly and things like that, you know. All right, bye.
I think that's so beautiful. I could just listen to the late Frank O'Flaherty all day long. Over 800 pigeons at one stage, and he chatting with Seamus and feeding the corn. Some lovely comments from you guys. Well said. Kenny says, I spoke with Frank many times on Shandon Street over the years. A complete gentleman with a heart of gold. May he rest in peace. Bernie says, rest in peace, Frank. A gentleman, and my deepest condolences to your sister Anne and the family. Niamh, rest in peace, Frank. Loved his dog and loved his pigeons. A lovely man. For many years, you'd see him with the dog. I think somebody said to me that Frank's dog passed away some time ago and he took it very badly. Obviously, you know, himself and his dog were great old buddies, great old chums. Colin says, I got to know him for the last few months. I used to sit and have a chat with him. One of the nicest people I've met since I started working in the Mercy Hospital. May he rest in peace, bud. Mary says, a lovely man who raised a lot of money for charity. Let's remember the years he spent on Shandon Street raising money for Marymount, particularly on Daffodil Day. They should make a spot, says Shane, in the new park as they upgrade the city. They should make a new spot in the city to the Birdman, as I believe this would be a great addition to the character of Cork itself and so much more. Yes, we already have the Onion Cellar, the Seamus Murphy sculpture, and I think this would be a great opportunity to honour Frank as well. Many people agree with that. Rest in peace, Frank. I spoke to him many times on the Cold K over the years, going way back a long time ago. Very friendly, very outgoing. And one more for now. Frank, a big piece of Cork City is gone. You were a true gentleman and a true legend. Look over all your family and friends now at this sad time. A man that was full of wisdom, well educated about his country, loved his city, and loved sharing the stories about his city. You're now reunited with your wife, Frank, and may you rest in peace. Beautiful tributes from you guys this morning. I'll get some more on the air in a few minutes' time. But I want to go to the north side, to the one and only cobbler, Martin Duggan. Martin, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. Good morning.
Sad. How well did you know him?
Yeah, I do well, yeah. You know, we've lost one of the great characters of Shandon Street now with Frank, you know. But I did, sure, he was a constant in Shandon Street every day, you know. You'd see him up and down and he'd be in Centra, you know, and he'd be in calling to the local shops and chatting. And, you know, I guess what I take from Frank, I think, is he was one of the most positive people I ever met, you know. He was always either going somewhere or coming somewhere,
doing something.
Or he wouldn't be doing something. He wouldn't be a guy who'd be sitting down in a couch watching Jeremy Kyle in the afternoon or something, you know. He'd always, you know, and it was always for charity or the good, you know, as you said in your piece there about animals, looking after animals. His dog Gypsy, which he really done a great job on, and the pigeons, or the charities.
Where's he from? Was he a Grona Brauer man?
He was up from the, I don't know exactly where he lived, but he lived up in the north side. It was actually his neighbour told me Saturday morning, Maeve, who is his part of the Shandon history group, and she used to always be telling me when he was in and out of hospital and, you know, how he was and whatever.
Yeah.
But she told me, he says Saturday morning. But it's always in Shandon Street I used to see him, you know, and he'd come in and he'd chat, and he'd as I said, like, he was always just so positive. You couldn't dare be in bad humour. I remember one time I came in, it was a Monday morning, and I'd be kind of a glass half full type person now. But yeah, it was a Monday morning, I had a bit of a hangover maybe, and, you know, I was taking down the shutters, and Jesus, Monday morning, and in would come Frank. Good morning, Martin, how are you today? You couldn't dare be in bad humour. I need a pair of laces for my runners. I'm doing the Cork City Marathon for charity next week. So there was a big debate about the type of laces he was going to get and everything. So that was grand. So off he went. And then at the weekend, I photography is a little bit of a hobby of mine. I was after buying the telephoto lens, so I said, you know, I'll go off down now to the marathon and I'll test it out on some of the runners by the Leaf Hill, by the straight road.
Yeah.
So off down I went, and it was a day like today now. It started to rain, and I was photographing away all the runners coming, lashing rain and soaking wet, and then like a mirage, out comes Frank with an golf umbrella, you know, and he's strutting purposefully along, you know, and
good morning, Martin. Nearly finished now.
Doesn't matter how you do it, man, as long as you do it. It was probably your laces got him to the finishing line.
Exactly. He saw the camera and he got him walking. But no, he always. But that's you know, that's one thing. That's what I would always take from Frank. You know, his enthusiasm and his charity work. You know, he was always talking about his charity work for yeah. Marymount.
Yeah, but wasn't Marymount Daffodil Day, the Irish Cancer Society, things like that? He was always up to something.
Always on penny dinners, everything. He always had, like, he would be all of a do before Daffodil Day. He would go off down to Stacey and Shannon Flowers, and he would get the flower boxes from her, and he would go down just at the by the Northgate Bridge there, and he would perch out, and he'd have his daffodils, and he just loved it. Good morning, everybody, and he'd sell his daffodils, and it would be for cancer for Marymount, and he would give that, and he'd be very proud, and he'd get the letter back thanking them, you know, them thanking him for his.
He had a great. You describe him somebody has a great attitude to life. In fact, Paul picks up on that. He says I used to serve him when he used to walk out to Blarney with his dogs. A pure gent of a man, a great attitude in life, a great storyteller. He would walk to Blarney with the dogs.
Oh, he'd walk,
have a couple of pints and perhaps walk back.
Yeah. He'd walk everywhere. And again, as I said, you know, when he'd go into centre now, he'd be holding court with everyone. Good morning, good morning. Nobody would dare say they were in bad humour, you know. And I suppose it was probably his association with charities that he would see people, you know, that who couldn't get up out of bed, who, you know, couldn't do things. And he would be kind of saying, don't you dare kind of be in bad humour, you know, when you're walking and you can get out of bed.
He knocked a bad humour out of his. Another Frank here says that he worked with him in juries. He describes him as one of nature's true gentlemen. He was in the old juries, was he, Martin?
That's correct, yeah. I think he was up in the old juries, and he was very, I remember, I was just reading on social media, he was very particular about the whatever he was making and stuff like that, you know. That would be typical Frank again, though, with the laces, you know. He'd be very precise about everything he would do, you know.
Was he a waiter? Was he a barman? Was he in the kitchens, I wonder?
I don't know what he'd done up there, but I think he had something to do with the kitchen.
Right.
Certainly,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and he would have been in the Navy as well, because you would know that a mile from him, you know, that he had a military kind of a background, you know, because of his marching and his moving and all of the time.
Morris says, I took my class on a trip to Nanonagle Centre a few years ago. We walked back through Dawn Square afterwards and we met the birdman. He gave my students and myself corn to feed the birds. We were literally covered in pigeons. Of all the things we did that day, that made the children's day. A fantastic memory, and I've lovely photographs of it, and I've never forgotten them since. Yeah. As Maura, he's a real people person.
He used to love being there. You know, he used to love being in Shannon Sheehan Court. He loved Dawn Square. He started out a couple of years ago, I think, but maybe about 5 years ago, and he just loved the company, and he loved the interaction with people, and he'd love to see the reaction when the kids, when, you know, he'd give them some of the corn, and the pigeons would come down. And he loved the banter, didn't he?
Eileen worked with him in juries. She says, I worked in juries with Frank. All of the customers loved him. I can see why. He had a great way with people, and he always had great crack with the staff and customers. He was mighty. I'm sure someone will feed the birds for you now, Frank. You'll be missed around town. Yeah. I don't know whether anybody will pick up the responsibility of feeding the pigeons. He must have spent a fair whack of cash on corn, though.
I think, well, did he not say it in the audio there that you played? The chap in this pet shop in the North Main Street used to look after him, and he said that to me himself. He was always giving the corn.
Oh, brilliant. Another great Cork example of kindness and generosity.
Kindness, exactly.
It's awfully
nice. He knew what he was doing with it. But he'd be a sad loss to the area. Again, one of the you know, the great characters of the Shandon Street, the Shandon area. And again, as I said, what I'll take from him is his absolute positive. You know, because
I've never seen him in bad humour. You know, never ever seen him in bad humour. Always positive, always going somewhere, always coming from somewhere, always had a plan supporting charity, feeding the pigeons. He was always doing something, you know.
And they knew him. Each and every one of those pigeons knew the Birdman, I can tell you that. And they knew the time and they knew the place and they were there on cue. Some came from Fitzgerald's Park, others came from Bishop Lucy Park.
They had the slots like they caught up.
Nice one, beautifully said, a lovely tribute. Thank you, Cobbler. Much obliged to Martin Duggan as always.
No,
Martin has you've got a fabulous is it Facebook where you do the Shandon Image News?
Yeah, I do. I photography is a bit of a hobby of mine, and because I'm here all the time and I do photographs, I kind of do a social documentary of the Shandon area, and I've been doing that for years, photographing everybody. I posted a couple of images now of Frank.
We got to check it out.
I took, yeah. No, there's a lot of other photographers, you know, I'm in Cork Hammer Group, and from the Blarney Club and the Ballincollig Club and other clubs, who took and some audio as well, video as well, who've done such beautiful photographs of Frank, and they might post them, maybe.
Oh, well, when we get off the air today, we'll try and track some of them down and reshare, because I don't want the opportunity to go, because there's
some lovely images on them.
Another wonderful Cork man gone. Thanks so much, Martin. Look after yourself. Take care. Let me stay with this, because again, another good one gone, lads, that's for sure. And maybe there should be some kind of an acknowledgement of him on Dawn Square in the shape of, perhaps, I don't know, a little statue wouldn't be a bad idea, or some kind of acknowledgement of the love that he had for Cork and the love that Cork people had for him. Amongst them, Lorraine. Lorraine, good morning.
Morning, Neil.
Did you work in juries with Frank then?
I did.
Okay. How long ago are we talking now?
Oh, my God. I was only 15 at the time. Jesus.
I was going to ask you, but you said we're talking about 35, 40 years ago then. 35 years ago anyway.
Yeah, definitely.
Was that the old juries?
Correct.
Okay. And what did he do in juries?
He was a waiter.
I'd say he would have been fantastic with people.
Oh, my good God. Unbelievable. Like, as your caller prior to me there now, he was just... Every single thing he said was Frank to the ground. Nothing ever bothered him. Nothing got under his skin. He was just always happy.
And always in good form.
Always. And his shirt, the white shirt, he used to wear a red jacket, white shirt, you could shave your face with the shirt. It was that pristine. I recently moved into Cathedral Road myself, so he only lived up the road from me.
I'm just thinking about him working in juries, serving people their breakfast, their lunch or their dinner or something. There must have been great chats, though.
I'd say their dinners were gone cold by the time Frank be talking to them.
Do you remember him then when he was with the Birds on Dawn Square?
I do. And he remembers me when I moved in here to Cathedral Road. He said, "Hello, my friend."
Larger than life, yeah. Awfully sad to hear he's passed away, isn't it?
Oh my God. No, he's after about a tough year and a half. He was in and out of hospital for a bit. He was out and in and out. The chest, his breathing wasn't great, but it never held him back.
No, I would say he fought the good fight in a positive way and took nothing lying down.
Without a shadow of a doubt.
Well said. Thanks for that, Lorraine. You're lovely. Appreciate it. Thank you. Fiona says, "Oh, poor Frank. He really was a gentleman. I had many chats with him about his days at sea, you know. He really was a Cork legend. Rest easy, Frank. You'll be missed. A complete gentleman in the making. Very outgoing and friendly guy." Actually, I remember chatting with Frank, the Birdman of Dawn Square, not too long after Seamus went down and recorded some beautiful audio with him feeding the pigeons in Dawn Square. We had a good old chat, and in honour of his passing, I want to give you an opportunity to hear it. Perhaps you missed it last time round, but he really was just one of a kind. Frankie joins me by phone. Frankie, good morning.
Hello, Niall.
How are you getting on?
Marvellous.
Listen, what happened anyway? Did one of the wardens have a chat with you?
Well, one of them came along to me when I was feeding him, Neil.
Yeah.
And there was him. He said to me, look, he said, I know, he said, that you enjoy doing this.
Yeah.
He said, but I was told that you have to stop doing it because a complaint came in. There was a complaint came in from one of the shops saying that there was feathers and poo everywhere.
Yeah, and is there?
Yeah, I wouldn't think so, Neil, no. Because I tell you now, the Cork City Council blokes, the cleaners around the city, they make a great job and this place is spotless.
They do.
And I tell you, after feeding the birds and when they're gone, there's nothing there, Neil.
And he was quite nice about it, the poor old warden. I mean, he didn't want to be doing it, like, but
I say he didn't want to be even doing it. He didn't even want to come near the place.
Yeah. Firstly, what's your routine usually like? Is it every day? When do you
Niall, if I feel like going down there to feed him, I leave here to do a bit of shopping and I get a bag of seed off Eddie O'Flaherty in the North Main Street in the pet shop. And I feed the birds and I just sit there and enjoy doing it.
And they come from all over, a lot of them.
They come from all over the place.
Yeah, I heard that. Bishop Lucy Park is one of the places that they come from.
Right, yeah.
And how long would you stay there then?
Only about maybe 10 or 15 minutes.
And a lot of people gather to watch. I'd say kids.
They go over there and then they get their program taken with the children. I give them a bit of cotton and the lands on their hands, you know. And they used to really enjoy doing it. And you get that photograph taken. Other people from different nationalities used to always come over, you know.
You loved
and
it.
And
yeah,
loved it.
Yeah, because you love wildlife, but you love people as well, and you love chatting with them.
I've got great time for most people.
So what's going to happen now?
I don't know, but I may say I'm only hoping that when you highlight it, I might get back there.
Yeah.
It's only for 10 or 15 minutes, Neil.
Because the council workers do super work. I mean, I've often seen the city centre after a weekend night, and the next morning it's completely blitzed and spotless. And they were cleaning up, weren't they, for you?
Yeah, they're cleaning up everything. Dawn Square to be immaculate and everything else. And they're great guys. They're a great bunch of blokes.
Yeah. Are you going to continue, or what are you going to do?
I'm going to continue feeding them. I'm going to go down there now this morning, and I'm going to feed them this morning.
What time?
I'll be down there now in about an hour's time.
Yeah, yeah. And when you leave then, at what stage would the workers come along and give the place a wash?
Well, when I go down there some mornings, they've already been there. Because you know yourself, getting me up at the dawn.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And they're great guys. Like, they never complain, never say nothing.
And did the warden say what would happen if you continued to feed the pigeons?
That's right, get a fine of 100 euros.
Right, okay, so yeah, you could ill afford that, like.
No, I mean, it is very wrong, Niall, because you know yourself, the pigeons were there before these people ever came along on this planet. I mean, the pigeons were always there. And it's great to see them flying around in fox and everything in the city. No pollution, no nothing or anything else. I mean, what harm am I doing with them down there? No harm. And just people, they're just greedy people.
Yeah, I'm just wondering whether they might feel that customers can't get in and out of their shops because there's pigeons flying all over the place. No, it's only 10.
It's nothing like that, Niall.
It's only 10 or 15 minutes a morning, is it?
Yeah, that's all. That's all I do, yeah. But I mean, say the only thing about you don't see the pigeons flying at people in doors or anything else. I tell you now, Neil, there's something very wrong going on there.
So would you pay the fine or refuse to pay it? You go to court?
I tell you now, gospel truth, I wouldn't pay it at all.
Right.
And I'd go to court and I would tell the judge, yes, I'm talking to you.
And what would you say to him, what you just said to me?
The judge, I said, in the name of God, what's happening in society? I'm feeding birds, wildlife, what's wrong? If there's a bit of poo, so what? The corporation blokes come along, they're great guys, as I said, and they'll clean the place and wash it. They never complain to me.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, in fairness, the poor old litter warden didn't want to be doing that either, but
he didn't want to be doing that either.
Yeah.
Because he was a decent guy.
And is he the kind of guy, is he the chap that will have to come back and give you the fine then?
Well, I suppose he'd have to come back and give me a fine, yeah? If you're only doing his job, Niall.
Yeah, and are you on a pension then?
I am, yeah.
Yeah, and let's say if you stopped doing it, that would get you down, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, yeah, I wouldn't, I'd like to carry on, you know? But nothing gets me down, Niall. I mean, that's disappointment in life, and we all got disappointments in life.
What about if you moved to the Peace Park or by the Republican Memorial?
I wouldn't go down there. I wouldn't like to destroy that place either. But I mean, inside in the Peace Park, there'd be a load of pigeons there. And I was down there yesterday feeding the pigeons in the Peace Park.
Right, so
because the little warden suggested that to me.
No, and I'm just wondering, you know, if we can maybe broker some kind of a deal that, you know, okay, leave Dawn Square and go to, you know, that area there by the monument, the Republican monument.
That's right.
What about there? It's a big courtyard.
I know, yeah, but I'd like to keep that place clean.
Yeah.
I mean, say, it wouldn't be fair, like, I mean, say, they could be landing on the statues there and pooing all over the place and that, and that's not fair, like, you know. And actually, it is the Republican Monument, and it's a brilliant landmark here in Cork,
you
see.
Yeah. You have a seat there, don't you, on Dawn Square?
Oh, I have a seat there now, yeah.
How long have you been doing it?
Over four years now.
Right, all weather?
Oh, I will come down in the winter, the summer, spring, you name it, I'm there.
I thought it was the loveliest story when I heard you were doing it. I'm very disappointed if it comes to an end, I have to say. Because it's one of those things, you know, it's one of those things that we love about Cork, you know, that kind of, you know, nostalgic. Yeah, I love the, you know, the audio that we played there of you. You seem to know an awful lot of people passing.
By the people.
Yeah. Giving you the banoo, like, giving you
I got great friends here in Cox, Niall, and what's the name, you know, they're great people, and they're very decent people, and people often come over and give you a bag of seeds. They might go into, you know, the shop there, what do you call it, Diesel's, or the place there, and they go in and get a couple of bags, and they bring it off to me, you know.
Yeah, I suppose the old bag of corn is cheap enough, is it?
It's cheap enough, there's no problem there, Niall.
And also, look, come here, the pigeons would miss you, never mind the people of Cork.
And actually, the funny thing about it, when you come down, you know, Cassis Race, and you come right near the Dawn Square, the pigeons even know me, and they come down straight away, you know.
They know you.
They come down in flocks.
They recognise you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You must be very upset. Well, we have a call in now to the Environment Department at Cork City Hall, just to see where they're at with this. I don't know what their response will be, but it would be great if they just backed off and let you get on with what you do, because people love it, you know.
I know, yeah, because it's only 15 minutes, Niall, you know.
But some business has put in a complaint, you see, so they have to act on it.
That's right.
So listen, let's see what they have to say in response. But are you going feeding them this morning?
I'm going down out this morning and get a bag of seed off Eddie O'Flaherty in the pet shop in the North Main Street.
What time will you be there at?
Huh?
What time will you be there?
I'll be there. What time will I be there at?
Yeah.
I'll be there about, what time is it now?
Half nine.
Just half past nine. I'll be there about 10:15.
All right, okay. I don't know if Seamus is free maybe to go down again, maybe about 10:15, and just see what happens when you start feeding them this morning, you know?
Yeah. Well, I tell you now, before Seamus comes down, I met him now before. He's a great guy too, just like yourself.
Yeah.
But I'll go down there, but I just need to put the corn out and then I kind of bail out, you know?
What are you saying to me? Are you afraid?
No, I'm not afraid. Like, Jesus, I'm afraid of nothing, Niall. It's just that, you know, he might be better off, like, for a while until we get this thing sorted out.
All right, okay. Well, we'll keep our powder dry, so, and we'll leave you off this morning and await a response from them. You're not interested in moving to another spot, do you say?
Right. Everybody knows in Dawn Square.
I know. Listen, our freedom is gone in this country, you know?
It looks like it, Niall.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it looks like it.
In all fairness, like, what harm are you doing? You're only you know, it's a beautiful sight. It's a wonderful thing. The pigeons love it. The people of Cork love it. The kids love it. It's great for your mental health. In all fairness, like, give us a break.
Yeah.
All right, we'll chat later and see what they have to say. All right, Frankie?
Right. Niall, I'll say one thing to you now before I go away.
Go ahead.
You're a great guy, and I know that you've done great things for people here in Cork City.
You're very kind.
I listen to your programme all the time, and you have done outstanding things for people.
Well, so have you, because
I've got great regards for you.
And I have for you, Frankie. I absolutely do. It's a pleasure knowing you. I'll talk to you later, all right?
Right, God bless you.
Cheers for now, boy. Take care. Take care. What a wonderful, wonderful man. It really is emotional listening to him again. And after all of that, and much of the response from you guys listening to my conversations with him and Seamus's audio and all the media picking up on the story, City Council backed off and they left him alone, and rightly so. Text 0868104106, some lovely texts coming in. I'll come back to them after 11. Can I also mention just for now, ahead of the 11 o'clock news, that it's Monday Munchies, courtesy of ourselves and Luso Cork. Your opportunity to win for yourself one of their big
Lusso extravaganzas, the fabulous fudge cake with the Belgian chocolate, the Italian meringue, the ganache, and it's on a wonderful edible chocolate board with macaroons and everything. Let me do some shout outs. People who are listening this morning, your chance to win. Cork City Community First Responders, they need food. Long day ahead. St. Killian's School celebrate their 40th this week and they could do with the treats for the colleagues. Morning to Michelle. Stonemasons.ie, building stone in Whiting Bay in Ardmore in this weather. Alice Barry Murray Properties, we work better with sugar. Katrina's in the office and sick, and cake makes everything better. Amberley Nursing Home in Fermoyer listening. Rockwell Engineering down in Cloheen. Well, certainly devour it this lunchtime. Green Valley Transport in Mallow. The Pathology Department at the South Infirmary Victoria. Abbeylands Nursing Home in Kildare are listening on this dreary Monday morning. Morning to all of the staff and the residents. Currabeg Nursery and Ovens would love the treat. Pro Photonics in Little Island. Capwell Bus Station. Paul and everybody working hard there. And finally for now, the multidisciplinary team at the HSE working at the Kinsale Road roundabout. So keep those shout outs coming. Text who you are and where you are to 0868 104 106, and we'll do the next bunch of shout outs in about a half an hour's time.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Monday Munchies, courtesy of ourselves and Lusso Ballincollig. Their husband and wife duo, Carol Barry and Ian Kerrigan, are creating and have been creating custom and artisan treats, handmade for over 50 years experience between the two of them. And it's absolutely beautiful, the range of chocolates and cakes and all sorts of beautiful biscuit creations. So you can check them out online, lusso.ie. So text who you are and where you are to 0868 104 106. You win the Monday Munchies. This is a serious cake on a beautiful edible tray as well. It's a fabulous fudge cake. It'll feed the entire work squad of you. Well, I suppose within reason, 10 to 15 of you anyway, courtesy of ourselves and Lusso. Get those texts in. Text who you are and where you are to 0868 104 106. I hope Pauline can hold on for a few minutes, if you don't mind, because I just need to catch up on a lot of which I've been doing already this morning. On GAA Go, incidentally, I've noticed that this morning it's been announced that the GAA President, Jarlett Byrne, says that he's very surprised by the criticism of GAA Go, or GAGO, from the government. He said you'd almost think there was an election coming up that they're criticising the GAA. Simon Harris has come out and said they need to rethink of it. Micheál Martin has said the same. Micheál Martin said, I have huge concerns about GAA Go. I don't understand it in terms of promoting the game of hurling. RTE and GAA have this streaming service that you have to pay €12 a match. Now, the GAA have come back and said that they only have one media partner, so a lot of the matches would never be shown. I suppose they're saying they can only pick one match, so they put the others then behind a paywall. But last time I checked, there was two RTE channels and there was also TG Cahir. And never mind the fact that there's also Virgin Media. But I suppose they're saying, well, we can only have one contractual arrangement with one media outlet. And that's the reason they're pushing back, saying that's why we have GAA Go. Another few texts on this one. Good to see the GAA will now be encouraging people to pirate the streams of the games instead. Can't come on air, I'm working. Maybe you can confirm, but Cork versus Kilkenny in the league on RTE was one of the highest viewed sports events of the year so far, and that was only the league. Oh, I think if people could have just got on and watched it on TV, particularly the Cork Limerick game, they would have seen an absolute cracker. A lot of people don't have laptops and don't have the tech savvy to be able to Chromecast a match from a laptop or a phone onto a screen. And some people wouldn't have the €12, particularly if they're pensioners. All the Cork Hurling Championships has been on GAA Go so far. They are well aware Cork people will buy, and that makes it even more of a disgrace. Amazing night down there. Can't wait for Thurles. Well done to the Cork hurlers. Massive crowd, best atmosphere in years. But a massive push in the terrace at the end, trying to get onto the pitch. Security was a bit slow, I think, in opening the gates onto the pitch, leading to some young people getting injured. Thankfully, it was mostly leg injuries, but it could have been a lot worse. As many teenagers, hopefully they'll have it improved by the next time there's a game. Wasn't aware of that. Simon Harris is going to fix everything in Cork, is he? The GAA? Dirty water in the taps, even perhaps the event centre. I feel an election coming on. What a shower. at work, can't come on air. Great show. Oh, incidentally, they're putting tents now in Heatherside Hospital grounds up the side of a mountain. Oh my God, what's next? Well, I was asking the question this morning as to where all of these tents are coming from. They're given out, they're destroyed, they're replaced, they're given out, they're destroyed, and they're replaced again. Lots then on Eurovision, which I'll come back to before quitting time, but we got calls on the way. Thank you so much for holding, Pauline. I do appreciate it. A good friend of yours, the late Frank O'Flaherty, is that right? And a good neighbour as well. Can you hear me, Pauline?
Oh, hello, hello, Neil. How are you?
How are you, girl? A good friend and neighbour, I think, yeah?
Good. Well, he was a very good friend and neighbour to everybody, but we've been friends for years, and I happened to see him on Thursday night. You know, I was done with him, and... I know you have lots of people coming through, but actually I was down at his house this morning because I knew I had to, his address book of, you know, things, and there was something that needed to be done, so I had a key to his house, so I went down and got it.
Okay.
So I came up and I was going through it.
When are the arrangements going to be published, you know? Or are they?
I don't know what's going on as yet, but they are delayed. All I know is that he will be cremated.
Okay, well, I know that people would like to wish their condolences on RIP.ie and or send our condolences to his extended family.
It would, of course, and it's not on yet. But this is something that I never even knew about. So I brought the book up and I was going through it to get, because I was asked by one of the family to see if there was a number in it that they wanted. And something fell out of it, okay? Can I read it out to you?
If you think it's applicable and it's okay to read.
Yeah, it's a photograph of Frank when I'd say he was about 22. And by God, did he look dapper, you know? I could see a 22-year-old girl looking at this and say, God, he's a hunk, you know?
And is he in uniform?
He's in uniform. He's in the uniform. And it says, Frank C. Flaherty, Charlotte, Michigan, Ensign, United States Navy, USS Oklahoma. And it says, above and beyond the call of duty. For conspicuous devotion to duty and extraordinary courage and complete disregard of his own life. When it was seen the USS Oklahoma was going to capsize and the order was given to abandon ship, Ensign Flaherty remained in the turret, holding a flashlight so the remainder of the turret crew could see to escape, thereby sacrificing his own life. For this, received the Medal of Honour.
You are joking me.
Yes. This actually fell out of it. I was actually...
I got goosebumps behind my ears.
I know, yeah. It actually fell out of it because, you know, we spoke about a lot of things and he told me some very, very private things. And I, with him, but this... Honestly, I could not believe it. I do you know what?
He got the Medal of Honor from the U.S. Navy for bravery.
The Medal of Honor. Arizona, and it says at the end, Arizona Memorial.
Was it the Oklahoma or the Arizona?
Arizona's down at the end of it, but it says here, Frank C. Flaherty, Charlotte Ensign, United States Navy, USS Oklahoma. I couldn't believe it. Like,
what
it
year
actually fell out of the book. Well, he looks about 22 there. Definitely no more than 25. You want to see the picture of him, like, you know?
Yeah, I'm just trying to find detail. Like, because I thought the Oklahoma, I'm open to correction, was one of those that was bombed at Pearl Harbor during the Japanese attack.
There's a sign up on the top of it, Experience Your America, Remembering Pearl Harbor.
Right.
And then there's the... And this, no, I've read now exactly just what was on it.
I know what you're saying.
It.
No, absolutely. And,
you know?
Yeah, how... Is there a date on it?
I can't see any date. No, I can't see a date on it. But... all it says is, visit this page on the web at www.nps.government/USAR.
That's incredible, because I'm just looking at Wikipedia here now. Apparently Oklahoma was modernized in the 20s. Was part of the Civil War, was on the West Coast, served in the Pacific. But it was sunk at Pearl Harbor. So would that mean that there was another USS Oklahoma, or was it the USS Arizona? It doesn't really matter. It's still, at the end of the day, a Medal of Honor.
Yeah, I was
for putting
sure,
his
I,
own
I was,
life
I couldn't
at risk.
Believe it. I couldn't believe it. Like he, like, and we, he's told me lots of things now, private things that had happened.
So Frank Flaherty was in the U.S. Navy. He was also in the British Merchant Navy, I believe.
He was. He got around all right, didn't he?
And he was in Kenya. What was he doing in Kenya?
Oh, he loved. I don't know. He was there a long time, and he loved Kenya. And I noticed for the last few occasions I was talking to him, he was talking about Kenya. He was talking about his father nonstop, and he was talking about Kenya. And he used to always say, like I said to him, he said, my favourite place was Kenya, Paul. He used to call me Paul. My favourite place was Kenya. And on Saturday morning when we heard, it was his nephew, Dennis, and neighbour next door, Tracy, that actually when they got no reply, they went in and he actually passed in his sleep, which is good.
Yeah.
You know, and when I did go up and see him, when I went up to see him, he was just in bed, like, and he always kind of, if I went down to him, and he sometimes would be dozing on the recliner when I went in, and he had his hands crossed on his chest, and his head was back a bit, and he just looked as if he was asleep. And the first thing that came to my mind when I realised that he had passed, I said, Frank, you're flying over Kenya now.
He loved it. Did he talk a lot about his travels around the world?
Oh, Kenya. Well, Kenya was his one, you know. And even there, when he got very bad, one day he said, I'd love, if I could just see it once more. You know.
He's flying over it now, says
he's flying over. That's what I remember thinking, you know, and then I'm not a religious person, but I do believe there's something there. And I said, look, you're flying over it now, Frank.
Isn't that, like, he was such an unassuming man, never bigging himself up. You would think that others would use the opportunity to constantly tell people they got the Medal of Honor for bravery, for remaining at their post, while others, this was a ship that had capsized and was sinking.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure. Are we accurate in the ship? You have the paperwork in front of you. In fairness,
I have the card here. No,
how old would Frankie have been?
Well, to me now, if looking at him here, I'd say he's 22. I couldn't see him be more than 25. Like he looked.
And how old was he? How old was he when he passed away?
He was 82 last February, 21st of February.
Okay.
But in the last certainly since this year, January, his quality of life had really gone down,
Poor misfortune, I know. I won't dwell on that aspect of
it. Gone downhill. But it was this, I couldn't believe this. I said, the people of Cork have to know this. Everybody that know. Now, maybe there are people out there that knew it.
Let me find out if, thanks so much. Thank you. Let me find out if Sidney O'Brien knew anything about that. I think he served in the army with Frank. Hold on there 1 second. Sidney, good morning.
Good morning, Ed. How are you?
Just picking up on what Pauline says there, Medal of Honor from the US Navy for bravery. Can you shine any light on that?
Nothing at all on that. But I know that Frank joined the Irish Guards around 1960. I joined in 59. And Frank joined around 1960.
The army he joined in 60?
Oh, yeah, he was in the Irish Guards.
When you say Irish Guards now, what does that, to a layperson, what does that mean, the Irish Guards?
It's the Brigade Guards, the Queen's Guards, up and down outside Buckingham Palace in that red uniform, black hat.
Right, the Irish Guards is part of the British Army.
Yes, yeah.
Not the Navy.
No, it's a regiment, Irish Guards regiment, a part of the Queen's Guards, that's what they are.
So are you telling me that you and Frank were the guards that we see doing the trooping of the colours and stuff at Buckingham?
Exactly. We did a couple of troops of the colours together.
So would you have been the guys that would stand statue-like for hours on end?
That's it. That's me and Frank, yeah. Either there in the Windsor Castle, Tower of London, Bank of England.
Pauline, did he ever tell you anything about any of that?
No, it's mainly always about the sea that he spoke about, Neil.
But like he had an incredibly varied life. I mean,
He did. He was in every country, I'd say. You know, I don't think there's a country that didn't see him.
Okay, but the army personnel at Buckingham Palace. People go along to, it's a big tourist attraction.
Yeah.
Frank was one of them.
That's hard to believe because he didn't ever seem to be able to stand still, you know. In fairness.
Niall, I can tell you now, around that time, we say from 1960, the Irish Guards was the biggest regiment in the British Army. And there were about 700 in the battalion. And I think there were only 6 Cork people in the battalion at that time.
And, oh, my God. You were one of them.
I myself worked for 2 of the 6.
Yeah.
Now, as regards Kenya, there were people picked out, about 150, to reinforce the Scots Guards who were based out in Kenya at the time. And we did a lot of training for this before we went out there. And the night before we were shipping up to Kenya, myself and Frank, he was going up to London to meet someone of his relatives, which I can't remember who the hell it was. But on the way back, I think we had a few points up there, and I mean only a few.
Yeah, well, you're entitled
to
it.
We had to walk. We got off at Brookwood Station, where Dodie Alfred is buried now. Which is a train station there, Brookwood. And we were walking to Parbright. And we were just about 1.5 miles up the road, and I think we were coming a lift. This is out the country now, you see. And some fella came along on the motorbike, and he took the legs off of me, and I broke my legs. And I was in the hospital anyway. I woke up in the hospital. Frank looked after me. He said he threw me into a cab with a whole load of nurses that were coming from a dance. And I ended up in this hospital. And the next day, the whole company came in around the bed in the hospital to see me before they went away, and I never made Kenya myself.
You never made Frank, it?
I never made it, but Frank did. But he was a very likeable fella, very popular.
Did you know him did you know him later in life, I wonder, Sidney?
I did. I was often up at his house.
And you knew about him being the Birdman in Dawn Square, which is what we're learning more about him now this morning. I get that.
Yeah. Oh, I knew that, but I haven't seen Frank now for a while. Only when I go into town, I might see him around, you know, but sir, I'm getting on myself now and I don't go into town that often.
I know what you're saying. Yeah. He was an incredibly positive man, though. He was always...
Oh, he was. Absolutely. Yeah.
How does one develop that? Are you born with that? That ability to be always happy, positive, kind, and upbeat? Do you know what I mean?
He was one of a kind, Frank. He was so likeable. Like, everyone liked him. He would draw a crowd around him. That's the type of guy he was.
Yeah. So he possibly would have been... I mean, you know, Pauline talks about the Medal of Honor from the US Navy for bravery. That wouldn't surprise you in the man.
Oh, nothing would surprise me about Frank. But I know he joined the Navy after. He was on the tankers, some oil tanker, I think. And I'm sure there was some accident down there, went on fire or something. I know Frank was involved in that as well, but I don't know where that happened. But he told me about that himself.
Right. Okay. Very sad to hear of his passing. A well-loved man, and what a really lovely, interesting life. Did you recover? Did you recover from that? I mean, did the motor? I hate asking, but did the motorbike stop or anything when you were hit? Take the legs from under.
The same fella happened to be in the Grenadier Guards. The fella knocked me down, and he was in the bed alongside of me.
Oh, he came off the bike as well.
He came off, yeah. And it was the height of the summer. We had a cream pants and a white shirt on. How he was drunk. He was drunk, I think. But I remember looking around because I was in the outside of Frank, and I saw the one light and we were chatting away. I said, sure, that's only more to bite. And we were the next thing, sure, I...
Bang.
Woke up in hospital.
Bang. Yeah. So, I know I'm dwelling on this, but the troop... Is this called the Trooping of the Colours, or is that different to the Buckingham Palace duty?
Oh, it's Trooping of the Colours. It's a Queen's Birthday Parade. It's the Queen's Birthday Parade once a year in June, I think it is.
So you guys would be very, very decked out then?
Well, you go for a run before all this would happen. You'd have a run in the morning, and going out on the march, you get a barley sugar sweet. And then that's what you dress. and you'd suck that sweet and granted it was gone.
But you know the personnel, the army personnel, that very specialist group of you which you were with in Buckingham Palace, they would stand for hours on end, and sometimes in the searing heat they would collapse.
Well, you would get a week in jail then if that happened, yeah, because they would say you were unfit or you were open to beer the night before. That was the serious thing, like.
Amazing stories this morning.
And you'd be watching the guy alongside you, make sure he's okay, because if he fell in your direction, he'd have the bayonet on the rifle and that could catch you in the face, you know?
Yeah, I don't know that was very kind and compassionate to people standing out in searing heat with all of that clothes and armoury on them and not being able to handle the temperature and falling over. You'd think they'd be asking them if they were all right rather than putting them in jail for a week, wouldn't you?
There was a way of standing still. You kind of on the balls of your feet, you know, and you could sway a little without anyone noticing. Really.
For how long?
Well, if you were street lining on the troop, you could be there for maybe 4.5 hours, maybe 5 hours.
So 5 hours, okay, you say you could sway a little bit, but for someone looking, it was like a statue. What would you be thinking about?
Oh, well, you'd be hoping if you were down the mall that you'd be under a tree with some shade, you know?
Tough job, boy, tough job. We're getting some great stories and memories this morning, and I'm very grateful to everybody for sharing them, you amongst them, Sydney. Very sad to hear of Frank's passing.
I'm really sad because I would love to go to Frank's funeral, but I'm booked to go on holidays tomorrow.
Listen, you've done credit to yourself this morning. Everybody could understand if you wouldn't be able to make it. A lovely, lovely tribute to a wonderful man.
He was a smashing. I'm so sorry that I can't go tomorrow for this funeral, you know.
Well, thank you for chatting this morning, Sydney. I do appreciate it to both yourself and Pauline. Pauline, thank you also for wonderful memories.
Thank you, Neil, for everything.
God thank bless.
You.
Thanks, Sydney. Thanks, Pauline. Back after the break. Text 0868 104 106.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Talking about the passing, as the Echo put it, a pure and proud Corkonian, as the tributes are paid on Lee Side to the legend Frank O'Flaherty. Following his passing, we may know him as the Birdman of Dawn Square, but he was a lot of other things besides that in his long and checkered life. Mick Cook is a nephew of the late Frank, and he joins me by phone. Mick, good morning.
Hello, Neil. How are you?
I'm good. And our condolences to all of the extended family on the passing of your uncle.
Okay, thank you very much.
You see, I'm trying to do the maths here, and I don't want to burst anybody's bubble, but if it was the USS Oklahoma, right, which sunk by the Japanese in 1941, then Frank wouldn't have been born.
No, he wouldn't have. No, he wouldn't be born. I don't think he would have been. I think he was 83.
Well, if he was, he would have been a babe in arms. So who's Frank C. Flaherty that got a Medal of Honor for bravery? And why would Frank Flaherty have it?
That could have been his uncle's.
It could. I mean, I wish. I hate saying this, but it just didn't kind of add up. You know, it might have been.
No, I don't think. I don't think it would have. No, I don't think so. No.
Having said that, if it was his uncle, we'll take that as well, because he's probably of Cork descent too, another Leaside legend. What do you think?
Yeah, he lived in Cathedral Road as well. Charles O'Flaherty was his name.
Would he have been Frank Charles?
It could have been. No, I don't know, Neil, to be honest with you. I couldn't say that, to be honest.
Can I maybe see the memorial again there, because I have a photocopy of it here. While that's happening anyway, while I get a copy of that, tell me about your memories of Frank. You were picking up on the Irish Guard at Buckingham Palace.
Yeah, he used to stand outside Buckingham Palace, and when he come home, we were all young now at the time, and he come home and he said, we'd be standing there for a long time. And he said the people, children coming along, they used to be making faces at them and calling them names and everything, trying to make them laugh. And they couldn't laugh. They had to keep being serious.
For how long of a day?
I think it could have been about 6 hours, I'd say.
And would it be the fellas with the big, big helmets on and
the big black hats? You know, the big, like the one over there, your one like Mal's with the big heel.
And did he tell you about that, or did you?
He did. He's just settled down. What he's, I was saying, you know, and oh, no, I'm a little older. I sang when I sang 69, but he was when we were. I was only about 10 or 11. He was telling us this, and he used to love coming. And then he finished up, and he went away to sea. Then
he finished with the Irish Guards, Buckingham Palace, Trooping of the Colours, the Queen's Birthday, all of the official ceremonies that needed doing. And what did he do next?
I think he went to work at Michelle Tankles, the Irish companies.
So that would involve travelling a lot of the oceans of the world.
He was telling me that he saw the world about 8 or 9 times.
Wow.
And he was on it one time there, and I think the captain was telling him to go down to the end of the ship, and himself and another fellow go down and open up the valves or something, whatever they be doing on the ship. And they went down, and this fellow went down, and he opened the valves, and he was blown into the air, both ways into the air. Never seen either. And Frank Deng got an awful burn. I think he was in hospital for 3 or 4 weeks in Auburn. Over from some foreign country.
What about Kenya then? What was the Kenya would have been before that, while he was still part of the army personnel, if you like. Did he talk about that?
He never talked about that. Well, he probably did, but I wouldn't remember. Like,
when he came home, then what was it like?
I tell you, when he came home, then I remember it was around January. Anyway. And it was only about 11 or 12, and he used to love going out walking out to Blarney Road and out to All Saints Wells. And he came home about a week, next to knock at the door, 2 o'clock in the morning. My father said, in the name of God, he said, was something wrong? No, he said, I'm taking the kids out to All Saints Wells, 2 o'clock in the morning, and about 4 or 5 feet of snow.
Did you go?
He did. We all went for him out through the fields.
Did he want to go?
Oh, we did. We had no choice. We wanted to go. We were young at the time. We wanted to just get out.
What was the attraction to All Saints Well in Blarney?
Oh, he loved All Saints Well.
What was that? It's obviously a religious well.
Also religious well, yeah. And he used to do it up, and he used to paint it, and he used to... And he'd walk out there for hours, and he'd be out there for hours, and he'd be sitting down, and he'd be talking to the family, and he'd get it all done up, and he might get a mess there then, and stuff like that, you know.
But if he left in the snow at 2 o'clock in the morning, how long would it take you? I know you were a child. How long would it take you to walk there from the north side?
We went through all the fields that time. I know you probably know where the rocks are, do you?
The
Blarney Road.
Are you talking about the grotto?
No, the rocks. They used to call them the rocks. No. Onto the Blarney Road.
No.
And we were walking, we were out there then, and it'd be about 60 coffees and we get home.
Six? Would you be starving?
And we mother then have a big fry up ready for us then.
How come he was always so positive?
Oh, geez, he was a great man, like, oh, God. And he loved doing a lot of work for charity as well, like.
See, it's amazing. You only know of one aspect of somebody's life. Then when you start chatting about them, he's a lot more than just the Birdman of Dawn Square. He led a very long and colourful life, saw the world 8-9 times.
He did, and he walked his jury as well. Then the old jury's long gone. And my brother, Dennis, then used to go walking every day that we go to Arches, well. But then when he kind of got sick, then he didn't go on the board then he took up a new hobby then, feeding the pigeons.
What did you make of that then when he took up pigeon feeding?
Oh, God. We saw him money on the paper and my mother says, in the name of God, is he going off his game? But no, he loved nature and everything. Like, you know, he loved Hellie dog. I have a dog with him, but I think the dog died a couple of months ago.
I think so. I can't recall the name of the dog, but he was fierce close to that dog.
I think it was a Dripsy. It was his name, some name like that.
Who?
I think it was Dripsy. Dripsy. The name of the dog.
Dripsy. Yeah.
I think that's what it was.
Yeah. Awfully, awfully sad. It's awfully sad. Many, many people sharing stories about the late Frank Flaherty this morning, and it's lovely to hear them. Mick, thanks so much.
Sir.
Thanks so much for taking the call. All the best.
Okay,
cheers.
Then. Have a good day.
You too.
Thank
Take
you.
Care. Yeah, I'm looking at Ensign Frank C. Flaherty. Ensign Flaherty was born in Michigan in 1913. He joined the naval services, etc., etc. It's very difficult to make up much of it, but I don't think at this, I think we can categorically say at this stage that Francis C. Flaherty, for whatever reason Frank Flaherty had it at home, is not the same person, because the maths just don't add up with regards to age or the period involved. I think that the Ensign Frank C. Flaherty died during the Oklahoma bombing at Pearl Harbor by the Japanese. And I'm open to correction on this from anybody who knows more about it. It's very difficult to make out the wording here. But I believe that he died during the act of bravery, staying at his post to allow other shipmates and colleagues on board to at least attempt to get to safety. There was a lot of loss of life, but it would seem as if he did manage, because of his act of bravery, to save many of them. As I say, hang on, I think I have an even better copy of it here now. Francis Charles Flaherty, died in December of 1941, an officer in the United States Naval Reserve. He received the America's highest military decoration, the Medal of Honor. Now, Frank Flaherty had this himself, for whatever reason he had it, personal to him, but let us not confuse the two Frank Flahertys. At the time of the attack, the other Frank Flaherty was serving on board the Oklahoma, was at Pearl Harbor. It was there for patrols and exercises, ultimately brought America into the war, of course. Was in Battleship Row. The attack began immediately after the first Japanese bombs fell. The ship was hit. Three torpedoes began to capsize. Those who could begin to abandon ship tried to do so, because torpedoes were striking home. Flaherty remained in one of the ship's turrets, providing light. Was it a turret light or whatever, to the crew so that they could escape. Oklahoma rolled completely over. He was trapped inside the hull along with many others. 32 crew members were rescued from inside the hull over the next few days, but Ensign Flaherty was not amongst them. So I'm reminded, actually, that, you know, the site there is actually a burial ground for many who perished in Pearl Harbor. 429 men were entombed in the Oklahoma at Pearl Harbor, including Flaherty. Now, the ship was raised and salvaged in 43, and the remains inside were interred in a marked grave known as the Unknowns at the National Memorial Cemetery in Honolulu, and Flaherty's name was inscribed there. So I'm happy to pass on the actual story. Sadly, it's, you know, awfully tragic for Francis C. Flaherty, who was born in America, probably of Irish descent. I think we would most definitely say that he was born in Michigan in 1919, but different to our own much beloved Frank Flaherty. But very lovely story nonetheless. Calls on the way. Text 0868104106. I don't want the opportunity to pass also to share a bit of Cork humour with you. My apologies to many texts this morning, which I'll pick up on in the morning, I promise you that. But Frank Flaherty was known for many different things. Of course, amongst them being the Birdman of Dawn Square. I think that sometime in the future that should be very much acknowledged by Cork City Council. And the opportunity should be not lost to mark it with some kind of a memorial to the man. But it reminds us, actually, of the Cork humour, particularly any opportunity to play this, to be honest with you, particularly when it comes to one of Frank Flaherty's happiest pastimes, feeding the pigeons in Dawn Square. I'd allow Paddy Comerford to pick up on the chat.
Pigeon racing. He was trying to visualise the scene now in the kind of up by the North Chapel over Sunday morning. And this fella, we'll call him Peter. And he recorded the stories about the pigeons. And there was two famous places, like Kerry Hall Road and the Burney Lane. And it had kind of a league, like, you know, a racing league. And they'd have 12 races in the year, like a race a month. And anyway, didn't Bernie Lane win 11 races out of the 12? And the Kerry Hall Road crew got kind of anxious about that because they claimed that they're the best pigeons in the world. So they decided to have kind of an extraordinary general meeting to find out what the Bernie Lane were feeding their birds on. So with that, then they kind of nominated a delegate to go down to the Bernie to see what the birds were being fed on, and they gave them travelling expenses and all. He had to pass 5 pubs. So anyhow, while he kind of got down to the Bernie Lane, and he went up to this door and he kind of knocked at the little box. And a voice came from inside, "Who's there?" "This is Wally from the Kerry Hall Road Club. Where do I know?" So eventually they opened the door and Wally went in with his cap in his hand, and he said, "Lads, I'm down to ask you, you know we have to admit defeat, but you have a fine flock of birds. But we want to know just honestly, what are you feeding your birds on?" "Yeah, man, that's no secret. What we do in the morning, now you see about 5:45. We leave the birds out of their cages and from their perches, and they flies away and it up over the North Chapel. They over Shandon and they kind of drops the wings for a bit behind Shandon because that's not all crowd like it. And then they goes up by the up by St. Vincent's Church up Sunday as well, and then they see Fitzgerald's Park and and they zooms into the park, they eat all the worms in the park, and then they comes back for 7:45 and they flies into the perch again. You see? And then we give them a kind of a drop of water and dust, and then the breast burst it out. And your man says, "Oh yeah." So your man goes back up to Fair Hill to report to the extraordinary general meeting, right, about the birds. And he was relating his story, and there was this small boy in the corner, kind of very tizzy, Doughton Thomas, and he related his story. She said, "They're telling lies." She said, "They couldn't be telling. I'm telling you, they're telling lies. Because I know it for a fact that Fitzgerald's Park don't open until 9 o'clock.
Call Neil now. 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Oh, some fabulous texts this morning on the Great Frank. It might be a good idea, Neil, to get in touch with the UK embassy to let them know that Frank has passed. They would send a representative to the funeral, and Frank would deserve this. That's a lovely, lovely text. Keep them coming. I'll pick up on them in the morning. Another lovely text here, one saying, "We were strangers, yet he talked to me as if we were childhood friends or family from day one. I loved that, and he loved giving life unconditionally and selfishly. Selflessly, I should say. I made a lot of lovely friends thanks to Frank. I'm confident that are already missing him. My girls used to love seeing him because he would come next to the buggy and throw the bird feed up in the air, and all the birds would come right next to the buggy. The girls would be delighted with that. A very nice guy, would be really missed in the city." And there are many more like that. Thank you for them all. Quick one here. "True gentleman. An honour to know you, Frank. Always a kind word to say. Sadly missed by so many people. Rest in eternal peace. I hope you're reunited with your family, your loved ones, and your beautiful dog, Dripsy, because you were devoted to that dog. The Sinn Féin TD Northside councillor knew him well in the shape of Tommy Gould. In fact, that's another aspect of his life, Tommy, that I wasn't aware of, that he was very much involved in social causes, in trying to do the right thing, a community activist as well, was he, Tommy?
He was, Neil, and fair play to you and Red FM for having the show this morning about him, because he was a real top character. He was a lovely guy, and I actually spoke to him last Thursday evening. We were out canvassing, and I knew his house, and I called in to check on him, and we were having a chat about the, he loved the elections, and he loved, he used to be at the front of every protest, whether it was for pensioners, medical care, or the cost of living, or Irish water, or even the housing campaigns. And over the last few months, you'd see him in town as the Palestinian rallies would be with Martin Road, and he'd have his little scarf on with the Palestinian colours. He was a man who was in touch with, I suppose, ordinary people and about ordinary problems that people have.
True enough. So yeah, you describe him as a man for the underdog, and while all that's very important, I'd say all of those interests, on top of all the charitable contributions that he made, probably kept him very alert, very sharp, and very young at heart. You know what I mean?
Well, does he need... I suppose what Frank did was he always got out there. Well, like, I live in Cathedral Road. Manny's the day he'd be coming out the road with his dog, and he, that was an awful loss to him. And he'd lean in the wall, and we'd have a conversation. And then he'd walk down another block of houses, and he'd have another conversation. And as Martin said, well, go about Shannon Street. The whole of Shannon Street knew him. He'd be up and down every day chatting with people. And Neil, do you know what it is? It goes to a different time when people would stop and chat.
Yeah.
And like, as they said, he'd be always saying good morning or good day and how are you today? He was always positive. He was always caring. And it's a pity we don't have more people like Frank with that kind of an attitude.
They're a dying breed, you believe, yeah?
Yeah, it's. I suppose the world has changed, Neil, and everyone is so busy, and everyone's got social media. And sometimes, no, if you say hello to people, they nearly, like, I travel all the time now on the bus and down to Dublin on the train. It's very rarely now you get the conversations like you would before with the likes of Frank.
No,
some people still do, but I think we need to get back to that to be a bit more friendly with people.
I know. Wouldn't it be a wonderful thing if there was some kind of memorial or tribute to the man in Dáil Square? We learned so much more about his life this morning than just being the bird man of Dáil Square, but it would be a nice gesture, wouldn't it?
It'll be a lovely tribute, but also, Neil, he was an ordinary guy. And sometimes we forget about ordinary people, about their lives and how they touch other people's lives.
Yeah,
and
he was
just a lovely guy. And he mightn't have found a cure to cancer, or he mightn't have been an astronaut. But what he was is a really humble, decent guy who was nice to people and who was welcoming. And I think what you said about, like, the statues, I think the statues around the city are beautiful. I think, and they get people talking and they get people engaged with them. And, you know, it's well, I was talking to him the other day, you could see he was sick. And I was talking to his nephew on Saturday who phoned him. Like, the one thing I want to say, Neil, he had unbelievable family and friends. The people around him really looked out for him when they knew he was sick. And when I spoke to him last week and said, did he need anything? He said he was fine, that everyone was checking on him and calling on him. And that goes to show, I suppose, the true neighbourhood. Like, Granabrahar is a kind of an older area of the city, and it's still got that kind of a bond with the neighbourhood.
Totally, you know? That kind of community spirit. What you're saying this morning and others are saying this morning is the reason that I love everything of Cork. Just the people, the bricks and mortar, the stories, the nostalgia, everything that we stand for. Tommy, thank you so much. I do appreciate your contribution this morning. I'm going to clip ahead, if you don't mind, Sinn Féin TD Tommy Gould, because I want to have a final word with Linda O'Flaherty. We're talking with a nephew a while ago. Linda's a niece of the late Frank. Morning, Linda.
Morning, Neil.
And again, our condolences.
Blown away. Oh, God, thank you so much. I'm so touched this morning by the tributes. But
Frank is looking down, and I'll tell you something, he's smiling. He's absolutely delighted because he was a real man of Cork.
He was.
And what a character. I have a few things I want to say, a few memories when I was a child. He's my father's brother, so I am Robert's daughter and my lovely Auntie Anne. So the two of them are left. And they were a family of five, four boys and a girl, and there's the other brothers have passed away. So Frank, when I was a child, I do know he went to the Sahara Desert and he came home with a rock, which I brought to school in St. Patrick's in Gardnershill. And I was so proud of the rock. I mean, who gets to get one of those? Yes, he was in the English Guards. And he did say to me as well that he was at Winston Churchill's. He was a guard for Winston Churchill's funeral.
Ah, for God's sake.
So he's incredible stories. But really, I would just like to say a huge thanks to his amazing neighbours, Pauline and Terry and Tracy. And all the wonderful neighbours, because Anne's family and my family and Dad, we'd all ask him on Christmas Day to come join us, and he would boast then he was offered five dinners on the day. The neighbours were incredible to him.
Eat all five of them.
No. he was a great guy, and we were very proud of Frank, and as you know, a real Cork man. But I do think he gets that, he got it from his dad, Jack, as well. I remember my grandfather, Jack, he was real dapper now, and they'd walk around town, and Jack was the same. My dad was the same. Anne Cook, everybody knows Anne, because they just have time for people.
Yeah.
I love that tribute that Tommy Gould gave there. Like, I'm probably the same myself. People would say, geez, you know everyone in Cork, but I always say hello. Because my dad was the same.
That's it.
We'd walk down Patrick Street and people would say,
we're kind of losing
hi,
that.
Bob.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we're losing
the
characters
really,
all too
really
often.
Are.
You know, we're losing them, and I wonder, will we ever see their legs again, like the legs of your wonderful uncle?
Yeah, and thank you so much
not
to everybody.
All,
it's, you know, we've no arrangements yet, they'll be up, but we're all very proud of them, and thanks so much for a wonderful tribute this
all
morning.
All right, Linda, mind yourself, and again, our condolences to all of the family. Before I leave you, it's our Monday Munchies as usual for Luso. Bartis Travel and Douglas are listening. Everybody at Suite 24 of the Cork Clinic working very hard. Everyone at the Blarney Health Centre, welcome treats always. Well, I suppose treats always welcome. Cork Flower Studios on Douglas Street. Retrofit are listening this morning. Cutthroat Barbers and the Currahan Road, Sheehan Plumbing and Heating, the Cork Plumbing Offices, 10 plumbers working hard and hungry, South Infirmary Pharmacy Department, Fola Lodges, Independent Express Cargo are listening, O'Sullivan's Pharmacy on board, Summerhill Construction, Simotech, and for Michelle and all of the colleagues at Lekela at the Mayfield Cove Foundation, we've already sorted out a winner. Thank you, Lee. And today's wonderful, wonderful creation from Luso, Monday Munchies from Luso, which is the most fabulous, big, big, fabulous fudge cake filled with Belgian Italian chocolate and meringue and ganache, and it's on an edible chocolate board. Incidentally, I want to give a big question, big shout out to somebody who's celebrating an important birthday today. That's Blondine. She is the pastry chef at Luso, probably responsible or part responsible for this creation. So happy birthday to you, Blondine. Have a good day today. But all winners for Monday Munchies, Cork Flower Studio on Douglas Street. Get the knife sharpened, lads. The cake's on the way, courtesy of Luso and our Red Patrollers. But we covered a lot of ground this morning. Everything else I'll pick up in the morning. But I think it was nice and proper that we remembered this morning the late, great Frank O'Flaherty, the Birdman of Dawn Square. Have a good day. I'll see you tomorrow.
Feed the birds, tuppence a bag, tuppence.
When Cork talks,
Cork people blow my mind.
They talk to Neil Prendeville
on Red FM.